Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking about the IRS. We're going to talk about sex, guns, Benghazi, liquor, education, and, of course, the tyrannical NLRB. As the, well, as the Republicans keep telling us, it's that agency that's going to destroy America. Yeah, those four little letters, the end of civilization as we know it. Personally, I hope the Republicans get their way, and I hope labor grows a set, and we see people taking to the streets, but we'll find out more about that. And big news, 24 days until we kick off the People's Tour for America. PeoplesTourForAmerica.com, the website. Can't wait for the kickoff. In studio, I've got Pat Lamar sitting, who will be with us the entire time for the People's Tour for America. Pat, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Very excited.
Yeah, you know, as I'm putting this whole thing together, looking at the locations we're going to be visiting every day, a little more pumped up.
Well, as you see the tour coming together too, it's pretty exciting. I have been reading through all of your notes that you've been working your behind off, I might add.
Want this to come off well. I think this is an excellent opportunity to talk about something that virtually no schools have been talking about. Labor education has been eviscerated from the curriculum. In fact, you know, it's been the goal of the wealth class, of the business class of this country for, well, over 100 years, to try and take that history away and to, you know, erase people's memories to what the past looked like. Because here's the thing, I'm a firm believer, if you don't learn from the past, you're going to have to learn it again in the future.
Absolutely, and you learn it the hard way, which is by having to go through it all over again. Yeah. I feel bad, though, for the ACLU, I just want to say, because the NLRB has won the evil four letters of the day, and I know the ACLU was kind of hoping that they would be the ones, but maybe they'll get their turn tomorrow.
Well, see, but here's the thing, I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with the ACLU. There are things that they do that, you know, I go, like defending Rush Limbaugh. Why would you do that? Well, I get the point, you know,
so the
medical records and all of that. Well, when he was going through his drug thing, there was some talk about going into his medical records, which I was, look, I'm on their side with that. It's just, you know.
You know, the thing about Rush Limbaugh is he should be able to be his own example of hypocrisy. You know, I mean, the man who never passed up a meal, clearly getting mad at migrant farmers who pick his strawberries. You know, I mean, really, are you pushing yourself away from the table, Rush? Because I don't see it happening.
I'm still waiting for him to leave the country. Anyway, as he said, you know, those drug addicts, they should leave.
Yeah.
And they should. I mean, there's a guy who can't pass a drug test. Maybe Governor Corbett could look to him.
As the man who can't be employed. $29 million a year, what we could do with his income.
Yeah.
That's his salary. $29 million a year. That's disgusting. To sell hate.
Yeah, well, it's very, very profitable.
He
very
makes
lucrative.
Me want to do it for free.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you look at these big moneyed interests who are funding this. It's not coming from you and me. It's coming from the Kochs.
And the hate is intended for you and me, though. Yeah. Not meaning you and me, the people
we're
on the radio,
for
but just
it.
The average, ordinary person. We're the ones who are supposed to hate each other. And if we're not careful, we fall for that stuff.
And that's nothing new. I mean, you go back to the famous Jay Gould quote from the 1880s, the railroad magnate, who said, "I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half." Nothing new here.
Yep.
Nothing new at all. A new Pentagon report out. And, you know, this whole sex scandal thing in the military, growing by leaps and bounds. I saw from this Pentagon report, every 3 hours, there's a sexual assault in the military in 2012. One every 3 hours, each and every day, 365 for the year 2012.
You know, you're hauling me along on this trip because I'm the historian who's going to write the book that is going to hopefully go to school so the kids will get this sort of education again. But this isn't a change in behavior. This is a change in reporting. And I'm absolutely certain of that.
Oh, no, this is, you know, now the
raping,
women feel empowered now. And it's not just women either. You know, before, with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you got to wonder how many men were raped in the process.
Everybody who has a small child that has fantasy stories they want to keep in their head, they should move the child out of the room right now because I'm going to blow one out of the water. But there is no such person as Molly Pitcher. And that is just the story that's told so that we can believe that one woman played a role in war ever in the history of the United States. They've embodied this one woman to be the one person who put down her pitcher of water and loaded a gun and had a role. Every wagon train that followed men into war through the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the history of the United States, had a wagon train of women behind it. They cooked, sewed, brought water, cleaned the guns, fired the guns. They didn't all dress like boys, the ones who wanted to be in it. Women played a role. And we have buried the story of women's history. And so now women are speaking out, now that women actually have an acknowledged role in the military. And I think that's what's happening. And so the good news is it's not new. And the better news is now maybe it'll stop.
Yeah, well, you bring up the Revolutionary War. I mean, the judicial system within the military structure comes basically from the Revolutionary War, which is one of the things that they're saying is the problem. That you have this situation where you have these assaults, one every 3 hours, every day of 2012. And at the end of it, only 14% of the people accused of it are actually convicted of anything, because a large portion of them are dismissed by the commanders who are, they're at the top. Accountable to who? Well, I think nobody.
Well, didn't we learn that from... Oh, my God.
You can't handle the truth.
I love that movie. No, what's his name who ran everything? First he handled the war in Iraq, and then he handled the war in Afghanistan, and then he became the head of the CIA or whatever. Now all of a sudden we found out that he, too, was a slave to his own, genitalia.
But I don't think he was actually... it's a different... sexual assault is much different than I think that.
Of course it is, but not sexual hubris.
Well, good point.
Sexual assault is about violence, but sexual hubris is still about a man in it with an enormous amount of power. And you know what? I don't care who has sex. I don't care who's married and has sex. I don't care if two consenting adults have sex with 75 people at the same time for 20 minutes. Rock on. Have a nice time. None of my business. I don't care, unless I'm one of the 75, and then I'm a multitasker I wasn't aware of.
There you go.
But the fact that people who have jobs like that...
Like David Petraeus.
That's his name. Thank you. I met him in Senator Susan Collins' office. He was waiting for her because she was with me. It was crazy. I'm like, I'm ahead of the general? Are you nuts? He's shorter than me.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's this iconoclastic girl, iconistic, that's the word I want, icon guy, and he is so powerful. And he's got everything by the
short hairs, sure.
And it's his short hairs that cost him everything.
It's the little general who got him in trouble. Uh-huh.
And that crazy woman.
But isn't that
which goes back to your theory on crazy women, by the way.
But isn't that just the male gender? I mean, really? I mean, you can go down the list of people who...
Oh, what I wouldn't give to find out right now that Barack Obama was just having oral sex. Instead of actually reading AP, please let him just be a man.
Yeah.
I'm afraid we're not going to find out that he probably hasn't had sex in 20 years because he's just so busy just being the stupidest progressive in the history of time.
You think he's a progressive?
No, that's my point.
But you said the stupidest progressive. That would mean that he would have had to have been.
Didn't you think maybe when he was talking, when he was saying, no, the war in Afghanistan has to end, and Hillary was saying, no, that needs 40,000 more troops, and he was saying, no, Hillary, people shouldn't vote for you in this primary. They should vote for me because I'm the one to end the war immediately, bring them home.
He didn't say that about Afghanistan. He said about Iraq.
He said it about Afghanistan, too.
But he was big on the...
He did the surge or the sending the troops in after he got into office.
No, but during his campaign, I don't ever remember him saying we're getting out of Afghanistan. Iraq, yes.
I'll find it for you.
Okay, because that's been my thought. Iraq, yeah, we're getting out of Iraq.
He was out getting out of Iraq pronto tanto. But he was also, no, we're not sending one more extra guy to Afghanistan. We've committed too much time already. America's longest war, blah, blah, blah. And Hillary's saying, no, we need to put 40,000 more in there and clean up. We need to clean up. And she was saying that's what she would do. And he was saying, nope, that's not going to happen. And then he gets elected, and then that's exactly what he does. And I'm thinking, sucks to be Hillary Clinton. Because people thought they elected Barack Obama, and instead they got Hillary Clinton. But Hillary Clinton didn't get the job.
Yeah, see, I don't know that I struggled with which one to vote for, because Hillary told me, I had her on the program, told me that there would be no more of these free trade agreements without really, really stringent. And I pressed her on the really stringent part.
Mm.
You know, Obama said, you know, trust me, which I should have known, trust me.
Yeah, that is
no new trade agreements. Yeah. And here we've got Korea, here we've got Colombia, here we've got Panama. Tax havens still open in Panama. They're still killing union members in Colombia. And we've lost jobs to Korea again. And the trade deficit has actually ballooned larger. You know, so, you know, to me, I look at all of this and
But we should have known that about Obama. The problem with Obama was people weren't paying attention to what he had been doing, even though he hadn't been doing it very long. People were paying attention to what he was saying. And what he was saying was all the right stuff for a whole pile of progressives. He was saying all kinds of peace stuff. He was saying all kinds of you know, public option in the health care plan. He was saying all kinds of stuff for the people who wanted a progressive. But the way he was voting in the U.S. Senate, when he was the usury fees on credit cards through the roof for Obama, he was cool with that. You know, stuff that was really hurting the little guy. And in 2004, when I was running for vice president, I spent a lot of time in Illinois because Illinois is huge with the Green Party. Huge, huge. They got 10% in the race against Blagojevich. 10%. 500,000 people voted for Greens. Are you kidding me? 500,000? Who heard of such a thing? I'm a Green Party member. I can't believe it, right?
Yeah.
But it was huge. So we were in Illinois all the time. And they were fabricating this man. He was running for U.S. Senate. He had just been a little local legislator, you know, and all of a sudden he's this national figure.
He gave a great speech.
Oh,
now look,
on.
At the end of the day, you know, and it's one thing to bash, to beat up on the guy, and he deserves it on a number of levels. But still, the other side, much worse.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, absolutely. But that's not. But see, I think our role isn't to say, my husband only beats me 5 times a week, and the lady down the street, she gets beat 10 times a week, so I got a better husband. Right. Yeah, no, we got to stop the beatings. And so, President Obama, you should be listening to everybody who loves you, because they're still trying to love you. They're still trying to defend you. You're putting the people who supported you in a horrible position.
Which is why I fear 2014 is going to be a slaughter.
Well, that's what the Republicans are hoping for. The Republicans are hoping that they can keep all of this crap in the media and have people not remember all the things they did. And I'm writing a new Huffington Post right now, and it's called Spare the Rod, You'll Spoil Those Boys, because where was everybody when they should have been holding the Republicans' feet to the fire when they were doing exactly what Obama was?
Because all of this stuff is just a hold-off, a holdover from the Bush years. It's that simple.
And Bush should have been impeached. House Resolution 333, half of 666, sorry. House Resolution 333 was for Cheney, and then they could get the other half, right? Yeah. And it was Pelosi who took it off the table.
You know, here at the end of it, you know, Democrats just don't have that killer instinct.
Guess what?
And the
other guys do.
And they do.
And they're after you right now.
Look, you know, they said from the beginning they were going to go after this guy, and they have, day after day after day. And when I saw the impeachment word come up today, I was expecting it. It's not surprising. And you're going to hear an awful lot about it in the coming days, weeks, and months. And it's not going to come off the table.
I really wish President Obama was different, because I have been outside the two major parties for a long time, right? A long time. And I didn't want Clinton impeached. I was like, are you crazy? This is ridiculous. Right now, one more drone bombing of a Pakistani school, I'm done. You know, I mean, that's the thing, is he's not helping people to defend him.
Yeah.
He really needs it. Don't start with cutting Social Security. Don't lead with cutting LIHEAP.
And don't lead with, now we're going to get $9 minimum wage, when you had said 10 a year ago.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
5 University of California medical centers could be impacted by a 2-day strike next week. Last week, 13,000 technical workers for the centers voted overwhelmingly in favor of giving the AFSCME bargaining committee the authority to call a strike. According to the union, negotiations have reached a stalemate over unsafe working conditions, including staffing ratios. The university has said that the main issue hanging up negotiations is reforming the $24 billion unfunded pension liability. The union has countered that the university continues to provide executives with high salaries and pensions while asking for the workers to sacrifice and accept economic concessions. The union has released a study that shows an increase to executive payroll of $100 million since 2009. According to the union, the cuts to staffing impacts patient safety as it means less training for technicians and increased stress on employees. If the strike moves forward, the university could see staff walking the picket lines at all 5 medical centers and at student health centers at all 10 campuses across the state.
The United Mine Workers of America is fighting hard against an effort by Peabody Coal to destroy pension and health care for retired miners and their families. UMWA says Peabody spun off a company called Patriot Coal and set that up to fail so bankruptcy could be filed, allowing the company to shed $1.6 billion in promised pension and health care benefits for retired miners. UMWA President Cecil Roberts.
This might be legally correct. Is morally corrupt, and we're going to find out if the United States government, state governments, the court systems, I believe it's all right for corporations to be morally corrupt and to do their workers and their retirees and their widows like this.
Taken from a UMWA video, here are union miners, relatives, and UMWA leaders talking about the fight for fairness at Patriot Coal.
These men worked, and my husband worked, so that you could have a company and you can make your millions of dollars. Why just discard them and throw them away? And that's exactly what you're doing. It's like you're opening up a trash can and dumping them in the trash. And I can't see you doing people like that.
And just to take me and put me over here and then put my benefits in jeopardy. It's no good.
Until I die, I will fight. I'll do anything this union asks me to do. State might end up having to pay for my medical coverage if I end up in jail, but that's what it takes.
We got some fighters in this union, and I think they're going to fight it, and I think we're going to win it.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If the federal government continues to do the kinds of things that this administration is trying to do, through the back door, through the National Labor Relations Board, that's killing our free market system.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
The NLRB has become a political sycophant for labor unions.
And one of the things the Congress should do immediately is defund the National Labor Relations Board.
It seems to me that what we're seeing is a ceding of power from Congress to the NLRB and other agencies.
Really is a freedom versus tyranny issue.
I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy. But if I can just bamboozle you and just share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world this
is. Yes,
be.
It's a freedom versus tyranny issue that, well, as Rand Paul would say, you know, tyranny! A worker having a voice on the job. The guy who wants to bring us back to the days of Lochner, back before you had minimum wage or maximum hour laws or even child labor laws. We need to revisit that. You know, kids have small hands. They could do, you know, really, really intricate work with those small hands. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. So a large number of professors, authors, civil rights leaders, human rights leaders, people in the faith community have signed letters to the Senate saying, hey, you have got to confirm these National Labor Relations Board nominees so that we can have industrial peace and blah, 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 blah. Personally, I'm of the mindset, screw it. Get rid of it. Let's take to the streets. But here to help me walk through the issue, Eric Fink, Associate Professor at Elon University's School of Law. Eric, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. Always good to be here.
So explain to me, what happens in August if none of these nominees are confirmed?
Well, you know, probably what happens, given the way things stand, is that the board will not be able to function It won't have, the board will cease to have a quorum. The Supreme Court said if they don't have at least three members, then any decisions are illegal. And now more recently, the Supreme Court said that when a minority of senators representing a minority, a tiny minority of the population, sit on their hands and refuse to do what the Constitution tells them to do, actually review and confirm nominees, that they can shut down this board by default.
So what, why do we need the NLRB? I mean, do you need it to organize? Do you need it so that workers can go to work? Why do you need it?
Well, what it's supposed to do is enforce the law that's on the books, that's been on the books for more than 75 years, which says that workers have a right to organize, and says that it's illegal for employers to retaliate against them or prevent them from exercising those rights. And what the law says is the labor board is where you go if you think those rights have been violated. So, in a legal sense, if the board is shut down, there's no other legal place to go.
Okay.
Of course, at least places outside the law, that leaves, as you said, the streets.
Which I think at some point we have to reclaim. For me, I think this would be a good thing where you start seeing people actually doing organizing, because I don't think you really need the NLRB to organize. I think you need them to enforce the law, yes. But I think I'm of the mindset that if you got people to say, you know what, we can't settle our grievances, we can't settle our problems through the normal channel of doing things, we're going to take to the streets. And I think at some point the employers start going, hey, put those people on the NLRB so we can get business going again.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to that. It's a funny thing for a law professor, to question whether the law has ceased to be really useful. In the clips before, I actually agree with Rand Paul. There is a question of freedom versus tyranny. He's just got the roles reversed. This is about freedom of workers to exercise rights that the entire world understands are fundamental human rights versus the tyranny of a handful of senators representing special interests. But that's exactly right. The reason we have a labor board to begin with is that workers were occupying factories, sit-down strikes, some very violent street fights. And if it takes going back to that to get back to dealing with things within the law, then I think that could be an appropriate response, for labor. There's really no other option.
There is no other option. If the Republicans are hell-bent on destroying the NLRB, which you go, why are they really bent on destroying it, or do they just want to temporarily neuter it until they can gain control and then use it against workers like they did during the Bush years?
Well, now here's the kicker, and people haven't really, really caught on to this. The law imposes restriction. It gives workers' rights and imposes restrictions on employers, but it also imposes some restrictions on unions. Some of those are very objectionable, like secondary boycotts. Unions aren't allowed to engage in effective solidarity strikes. Here's the clincher. If a worker or a union thinks that the boss is violating the law, the only place they can go is to the NLRB.
Right.
But if a union decides, screw it, we're going to engage in secondary boycotts, we're going to engage in factory occupations, we're going to engage in mass picketing, guess what? The law allows the boss to skip the NLRB and sue in federal court. And guess who's going to decide that case? Judges who have gotten through this reactionary Senate, which is refusing to confirm any new judges. So they're effectively packing the courts with reactionary judges like the ones who struck down the board's rule the other day.
So do you see this as a systematic plan, not a conspiracy, but just it's the plan. It's the GOP way. They have packed the courts for at least a generation, and this is just the next part of it.
That's what it is. It's not a conspiracy. It's right there out in the open. They're not ashamed of it. They're very proud of it. You hear Lindsey Graham talking. We heard the clip of Newt Gingrich. I call it coup d'etat. Like I say, I'm a law professor. I'm supposed to teach that this is a country governed by the rule of law. In this area, the rule of law is lying gasping on the floor, and these GOP senators are kicking. Okay? So at this point, there is no more rule of law. We have a coup d'etat, only instead of in Latin America with guns and tanks, they've done it quietly in suits through these filibusters and maneuvers in the Senate. Yeah. They have effectively taking control of the government out the democratic process. And at that point, I don't think people have any obligation to feel bound by the law. And if unions decide, you know, the way to get things done, start violating the law, you know, I don't personally have a problem with that. The problem is going to be that the bosses still control the courts, and they're still going to, you know, there's going to be cost to that, to the union.
Yeah.
They're going to end up getting dragged into courts, getting hit with all sorts of judgments. It's going to be a long, hard fight.
And, you know, I look at this, and we're taking our labor history tour, the People's Tour for America, starting on June 8th, where we're going to go to places where in the past the bosses have used bullets and billy clubs to put down organizing attempts, to put down strikes. They've used the militia to do it as well in the National Guard. And, you know, I look at today, we don't use bullets and billy clubs as much anymore. Now it's all done in a very sterile way with a briefcase and an expensive suit.
Exactly, and it looks clean and it looks genteel. And then every time workers who don't have those resources and those kind of powers, every time workers do anything to fight back, ooh, union thugs, evil, evil union thugs. But no one talks about, you know, the management thugs who are really hurting people in terrible, terrible ways.
And at the end of it, you know, it's just as dangerous. It's just as violent, you know, starving someone by shooting them or starving them by taking their job and kicking them out of their house.
Yeah.
Still the same end.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, look at West Texas, ignoring, you know, it's all related. You know, it's different areas of law, but it's a whole web of laws designed to require companies to treat workers like human beings. And they've decided they don't have to do that anymore. And people are literally dying every day.
You know, you go back and you listen to the rhetoric, and I hear it an awful lot. It started a number of years back, but Rand Paul during his rant talking about how wonderful Lochner was, and we need to revisit that wonderful decision. In according to him, I see us going back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s, the 1880s and 90s.
That's what they want. They want to turn this country into some sort of nightmare vision of a Dickens novel. You know, Oliver Twist or Hard Times, and that's exactly what they want. Workers to have no power and no rights.
You know, and I go back to the Clinton, to the Bush years, and how the Democrats they caved almost every time. And I remember back then screaming, going, you know, Elaine Chao as Labor Secretary, really? The people that they put on the NLRB back then, really? And nobody really put up this kind of a roadblock. And I said, you know, this is why people view the Democrats as weak, because they give in on this stuff. And I guess part of me thinks it's, well, because they believe in the government process and the rule of law and all of that stuff. And Republicans, they don't give a damn. It's my way.
Republicans believe in power, and the Democrats, unfortunately, believe in process. And they, you know, I'd like to live in a world where the person with the more rational arguments and support, better support, would win. That's not the world that controls our government and our country anymore.
It's the money.
And, you know, until people decide, in the good old days, you had some Democrats, you know, you had people like Tip O'Neill who understood, you know, the politics was a rough game. Now they're just process obsessed, and they don't want to get rough.
So where do you see this going? I mean, August, everything shuts down, I guess. The agency shuts down, and then you're going to see a backload of cases. Do you see employers taking advantage of this and really pushing down organizing, firing people? Because to be honest, there's very little penalty to fire someone for organizing.
That's right.
There's very, very little penalties in any overarching or overburdened, you know, over heavy-handed tactic by employers. Do you see more of that?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and that's the thing. You know, let's not romanticize the board either. In the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, even when there has been a fully, you know, functioning board, it's really, really weak. And employers have gotten more and more aggressive and been willing to push and cross the lines of the law. So that's already the case. Now, you know, all bets are off. The floodgate. There's already some indication even more employers are violating the law. I that's of course what's going to happen. The Republicans have seen the blood in the water. They're not going to confirm anybody. The board's not going to be allowed. You know, I hope that the people who remain on the board decide to push on. But it's going to end up in court, and we're going to see employers having a field day.
So now you were one of the signers of this letter, 400 professors across the country, civil rights leaders, human rights leaders, labor leaders, a whole bunch of people signing on to this. You know, what are you asking for?
Well, you know, what we're asking for should be really uncontroversial and simple. We're asking for Congress to follow the law. You know, if they don't like the labor board, there's a process. They can pass a bill to repeal the Labor Act or to amend it, to abolish the board. They know they can never do that. They don't have the votes in the Senate. And they also know that, you know, people, that would really, you know, raise a lot of resistance. So instead, they're doing it surreptitiously. All we're asking is stop playing games. If you have a legitimate beef with a particular nominee, say what it is, take it up in hearing, vote them up or down. But don't just keep abdicating your legal responsibility and saying, like Lindsey Graham says, I don't want to confirm anybody because I think a board that can't function is desirable.
Yeah, and you hit something there, up or down vote. I seem to remember during the Bush years,
yeah.
constant screaming, oh, we just want up or down vote.
Yep. And, you know, look, I hate the rhetoric of both sides, but I have to say, in this case, there is something to that. It's true. The difference is both sides aren't equally effective at it. The Democrats cave, the Republicans don't.
Yep.
And at some point, you just have to say, okay, too bad. We're not going to do it anymore, and we're not going to let you do it anymore. But, you know, I see Harry Reid and you know, the Democratic leadership in the Senate not being willing to press on that filibuster. And that's really, you know, the filibuster is what enables this coup d'etat.
Yep. And I said from the beginning, I thought Harry should have done away with that in a certain way to where, you know, not every vote has to be a cloture vote.
Right. And no, people around the world right now are looking at this country and scratching their hands and saying, this is supposed to be the greatest democracy on earth. It's insane.
Well, Bangladesh, here we come. And now Bangladesh is saying their workers have the right to organize, and now we're going the other way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Jeez. I don't know, Eric. But as this moves towards August, we'd love to have you back and follow up on this.
I'll be happy to, Rick. And you keep doing what you're doing because people need to hear it.
I appreciate it. Eric Fink, Associate Professor at Elon University's School of Law. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out. Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided, either they love us or they hate us. Walking billions off our backs, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account that we never give up. We'll be here one day longer. The people's voice is stronger. We work hard for our money, we work hard for respect. Keep fighting for these rights for generations that's next. One day longer.
Class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Step right up, folks, and take your chances in the amazing new American workplace. Constantly high unemployment. Low wages always, no employee bargaining power, a corporate paradise. This paradise has enriched the already rich investor elite and rewarded top executives with multimillion-dollar pay packages. It also lets corporations treat the masses of people in today's workforce like Kleenexes. Just use them up and toss them. After all, They're cheap, plentiful, and disposable. Indeed, taskmasters in suits have now redefined the term hired to mean that you're tethered to a corporation full-time, but you actually work and get paid for only the few hours a week when the boss calls. This nefarious practice, known as on-call shifts, is all the rage among national retail chains. Such giants as Abercrombie & Fitch, Gap, and Urban Outfitters require employees to work without set schedules and to be available to have their string yanked at any time, day or night, even on weekends, with as little as 2 hours' notice. Likewise, if customer traffic in a store is slow, retail workers who got dressed up, battled the morning commute, and reported on time can simply be sent away after an hour or so, with no pay for their lost hours. A recent survey of some 400 retail employees in New York City found that only 17% have a set schedule. Those with no set hours also have no set income and no life. If you're at the beck and call of the boss, what do you do with your children? How do you make a doctor's appointment? What if you're taking a class or trying to work a second job? This is Jim Hightower saying, this shameful on-call practice says that the corporation owns you, and that abuse of workers is a legitimate business practice in America. To help stop it, contact RetailActionProject.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
It is not worth fighting for this man if this is the kind of spokesman he has to respond to an ad like this by citing health care in Massachusetts.
Listen, but what we're watching and witnessing here.
No, I'm serious about this.
No, I'm serious. I know you're serious.
There's no point in you're doing your show.
I agree with you.
There's no point in us going to a convention and pushing for this man if he's employing morons like this.
Yes, I miss Mittens. I kind of do. You know, you need a rich guy to beat up on every once in a while. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So, it's a coup d'etat, Pat. Coup d'etat.
It is. And I thought that was brilliant.
You know,
yeah.
Eric's a brilliant guy.
Totally fabulous. It is a coup d'etat. They have used, and I used to do this about stolen elections. Nobody believes an election was stolen. Well, ask Bobby Kennedy. That's how they used to steal an election. They put a bullet
shoot
in
your head. Yeah.
Right now, then we had Howard Dean, whom I loved.
The media assassinated him.
Don't assassinate him. Just character assassinate him. Right. Yep. Have him yell a few times. Put the thing on a loop. Who wouldn't yell if you were in that crazy mess? And I loved Howard Dean. I think he would have been a fabulous president. You know, maybe not. Maybe somebody would have gotten to him, too. But anyway,
How much of that do you think it is, though? I mean, you know, because, you know, Obama's rhetoric when he took office was, you know, people were very hopeful. I mean, he did have the right language, especially for me, because I've said this before. I actually voted for him.
Yeah.
Every other election of my lifetime, I'm voting against somebody else. I actually went to the polls in 2008 to vote for him. Because he spoke to me on the, look, we need to get people the ability to collectively bargain. We need to get people into unions. Because you look to the past, when we grew the middle class, when we saw people having disposable income in an economy that was growing, it's because people had the ability to bargain for wages. That drew me.
I didn't vote for him because I vote third party, which means what? Everybody thinks I'd like to throw my vote away. But anyway, that's a discussion for another time. I got to tell you, though, I can't remember being happier than when I watched his inaugural march down the street, when I saw that beautiful black family, and I thought, oh, my God, my country's not the racist bunch of slobs I thought it was.
Oh, yeah, they are.
I was just, I know, but I, for a minute, yeah. Come on.
I never had that.
I had my braids in. Yeah. I was Pollyanna. I was having a great time. Yeah. I was sitting in a bar watching the inaugural stuff because I didn't have a TV, and that's a good reason as any to go to a bar.
I took my kids to the inauguration.
Oh, fabulous. So I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I get a bottle of champagne. And I've been a political hack for a long time. I look over, this guy, he's a very well-known Republican in the town, says, you must be awful happy today. I thought you should be able to celebrate. Right? I mean, that's how publicly happy I was with this outcome. He said he was going to eliminate mountaintop removal. A month into it, he has a closed-door session with the coal companies, and he backs off. How much of it is backing off? I think in Barack Obama's case, all of it.
Yeah.
I fought to defend Jesse Jackson for a long time because people talk about how he gave up the civil rights movement. He also wiped Martin Luther King's blood off his face.
Right.
So I can criticize. I'm an armchair quarterback. I sit here, I throw tomatoes and darts and, you know, everything and, you know, pick up the trash can and the puppy. But push comes to shove. I don't trust anybody. If you think they'd kill 150,000 Iraqis, they won't kill the president? Are you nuts?
No. Well, no, I've often said, you know, what happens when they take you in that room and
right?
go, here's reality.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice you won the homecoming queen nomination. Good luck on that. Now, here's the reality.
And I know that sounds like, you know, I'm afraid someone's going to boil my bunny when I come home at night, you know, but I'm not. I'm not worried about my bunny. I don't have a bunny that's valuable or important. I beg people to steal my identity. Come on. You know.
You're not going to be like the guy with the life lock who gave out a social security number, are
you? No. But honestly, I mean, really, these people are powerful, and they do make powerful enemies. That said, be a one-term president. Just suck it up. Be a one-term everything. Be a one-term congressman. Do you think Dennis Kucinich is happy today? He is not happy today. Why is Dennis Kucinich without a job? Because they slaughtered him. They went after him. They targeted him. He was in the way of their coup d'etat. I believe that as I loved his T-shirts, the ones with the backbone on them.
Yeah.
Dennis Kucinich giving you back your backbone. I mean, that stuff was fabulous.
I handed out flyers for him when I was a kid when he was running for mayor.
Yeah. And I'm not saying everybody's perfect. You know?
No, he was crazy in a lot of different ways. But, you know, the reality
hot
is...
Wife.
Yeah, very. You know, that's what it gets.
Eat beans off his head. She's a foot and a half taller, but
I've interviewed her a number of times. We've seen the both of them. But you know, the reality is the people in Cleveland, because I was in his district when mm-hmm. I lived in Cleveland, they were angry that he spent more time running for president and doing the national things than fixing roads and potholes. And if you go back to Cleveland had some very serious problems that weren't addressed. And look, you know, they pitted him against Marcy Kaptur. I, hands down, wanted Dennis over Marcy, but at the end of the day, the money won out in that one.
And that's what really makes me sad. And when I talk to people about things like campaign finance, even the people who have gotten their Republican Party stolen from them, the really good Republican people, who, by the way, you don't have a Republican Party anymore, even those people, when you talk to them about campaign finance, and they're like, no, it's free speech. You know what? If a 30-second ad didn't work, McDonald's wouldn't use them.
Now they're going down to 15-second ads.
And they have 10-second ads. They sell you the same story about their Egg McMuffin, and then they just put it in a the top of the hour break, a 4-second reminder, Egg McMuffin today, you know, and it works. And if it didn't, you wouldn't eat that crap. They not only talk you into getting a Big Mac, they talk you into thinking it's good for you. You know,
healthy, it's fresh. That's my other favorite.
I've eaten them so fast I've had to dig Big Mac sauce out of my sleeves.
Wow.
You know, I mean, I'm just crazy about them. But I know they're not good for me. But that's why the 30-second commercial exists, because it works. And if that's the way, if you're picking your president like you're picking your Big Mac, you cannot expect the president to be good for you.
I'm with you. I am absolutely with you. Quick break, right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts, comments, questions, right back.
While a poor man pays the fan for their bill and me, for killing me. Lord have mercy on the working man.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49% annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
Just like you or me, Earth casts a shadow. Earth's shadow extends into space in the direction opposite sun.
There are several good times to think about and be aware of Earth's shadow. For example, you can see Earth's shadow any evening ascending in the east. It ascends at the same rate that the sun is setting below the western horizon. The shadow is a deep blue-gray, and it's darker than the blue of the twilight sky. The pink band above the shadow is called the belt of Venus. And just so you'll recognize it, remember that the shadow is curved in just the same way that the whole Earth is curved.
You can also see Earth's shadow during an eclipse of the moon. Earth's shadow extends so far into space that it can touch the moon. That's what a lunar eclipse is. It's the moon within Earth's shadow. During a lunar eclipse, a small amount of light from the sun filters through our planet's atmosphere onto Earth's shadow on the moon. That's why, at the middle part of a total lunar eclipse, the shadow on the moon looks reddish.
There's a third time to think about seeing Earth's shadow, and that is, night is a shadow. When night falls, you're standing within the shadow of Earth. So check out Earth's shadow, in the east just after sunset, brushing the moon's face during a lunar eclipse, or think about it when you're standing outside in darkness after sunset. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Thank you. The National Labor Relations Act was a New Deal initiative which helped save American capitalism by creating a process which would protect the rights of employees and employers. This was before NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, which tore legal rights for workers apart, moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. Yes, we stand for the workers at Boeing in Washington State, but we also stand for the workers at Boeing in South Carolina, because they will have no recourse if Boeing wants to move jobs to China. You can't say you want to create jobs here at home while destroying the rights of workers to organize, the right to collective bargaining. These are basic rights in a democratic society. You can't say you want to protect American jobs and not protect American workers. Take away workers' rights to free speech, take away workers' rights to due process, and you create a new class of slave laborers here in the United States who are helpless to stop the movement of jobs out of America. Slave!
That's it. This is the battle cry. Come August, when they have neutered the National Labor Relations Board, what do we do? Do we take to the streets, or do we just take it? I know a lot of people are just going to bend over and take it.
I love your take to the streets thing. How about the Orange Revolution? Why do we keep watching news stories about how courageous people are in Eastern Europe and other places where, you know, the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, where they shut the streets down? Wow, isn't it great for those guys? Yeah, you know what? I'm included. They left their smartphone at home and they went and did something smart. You know, I'm the junkie who someday I'm just going to be walked into because I'm never looking up anymore. You know, never. I never look up. I'm always looking down at my hands. And I used to read books that way. But no, now it's all this electronic gadget crap. We've got to take to the streets and do something about what's happening to us.
No, I'm of the mindset, screw it. Give the Republicans what they want. Neuter the board and take to the streets and make employers go back begging for some justice.
Why don't we just take to the streets before we get there so that people don't all lose their jobs?
Well, because if you have a functioning board until then you get into the NLRB where they say, well, you screwed up, you're fired. If you have no law, you have nothing, who's deciding what?
Wow, Rick Smith anarchist.
No, I mean, this is where they're taking us, though, is it not? Is this not the position that their inactivity and really their scorched earth mentality is bringing us to?
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, there's only so much of you-know-what people are willing to eat. And I'm hoping we're getting to the point where we're full.
I was with Senator Mike Gravel, the guy who ended the draft, filibustered, and saved Daniel Ellsberg's life by reading the Pentagon Papers into the congressional record. He was running for president in 2008, and he called, and I met him at Harvard, where we had this lovely time with the young Democrats at Harvard. And, I mean, these are the best and the brightest, right? You don't get to Harvard to be a political science student and all up in arms about politics and sit in this room unless you're like it.
Right.
These kids look like they were Wall Street bankers. Like at 19. They take the tie off, you know, and what are you going to do? It's 2008. You've been both two big wars that don't affect you because you're not in the National Guard. What are you going to do about what your country's doing to the future with the borrowing to pay for these wars, the tax cuts that...
For the very wealthy that...
Yeah. Never before, even Richard Nixon had a windfall profit tax so that everybody who profited from the war had to pay more taxes. What are you going to do? And these kids were like, well, I got to study. I got to go to class tomorrow. I'm like, get out in the middle of the road. Stop traffic.
Yes.
I'm standing here with an 80-year-old man who's got more... nerve, more willingness. I loved it, though, when Mike Gravel was on the Democratic debates. And Senator, then-Senator Clinton and then-Senator Barack Obama were arguing about how they would end the Iraq War. And Senator Mike Gravel raises his hand and says, why don't you guys ask me? I'm the only one up here who's ever done it. Because we don't want to end it your way.
Yeah.
The Huey helicopter stopped selling. And we want to keep the F-22 Raptor selling.
Yeah, and I look at this, and what's frustrating to me on so many levels is the very wealthy in this country have done such a masterful job of dividing and conquering.
Mm-hmm.
They have done such a good job of pointing the finger and saying, you know, it's those unions that have cost us all of these jobs. And, you know, you look at the medicine that they're telling us that would work, all of this austerity, we need the screw quester. We need, you know, to screw those workers out of 14 days over the next 6 months. We need to take money out of their pockets, food off their table. That's the way we're going to solve our problems.
That's got to be unconstitutional to over... I mean, that's not a fair tax. Those 14 people are giving up their pay, which means they're being taxed at a different rate than other people who make the same income.
Yeah, those are just government employees. They don't count.
I know, if I'm face planting, so is everybody listening. That's the truth. That's their attitude.
Same thing with the teachers and the cops and the firefighters. Oh, they're heroes when they're running into buildings, but heaven forbid they have a pension.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at this recently released report by the Potomac Research Institute, who shows that our budget deficit's shrinking at a pace faster than any time since World War II, projected to fall below 5% of GDP this year. It will fall to 3% of GDP next year and 2% of GDP in 2015. What they've pointed out is, hey, look, the deficit, it's kind of fixing itself. This
it
screw
didn't
quester,
fix itself, though. It didn't.
This screw quester.
It didn't fix itself. The first 2 years when Barack Obama finally got Congress to do something, they enacted stuff that caused it to start shrinking.
Right. But what I'm saying is eventually they're going to come around and say, it was the screwquester that did this.
Ugh.
The screwquester had nothing. In fact, the screwquester has made things worse.
It's going to turn
fact,
it around.
What they're saying is, had, according to the economist who reported to the New York Times, had they not cut, had these massive spending cuts and the tax increases on the working people this past year, you would have seen the national unemployment rate a full percent lower. It would have been around 6.5%. And you would have seen economic growth at least 2% higher had we not done this. And, you know, you go through all of this screwquester and all of this austerity, all of this cut, gut, and punish, and what you end up with is a slower growing economy, higher unemployment, more pain, more suffering, and oh, by the way, larger debt and deficits. Exactly what we've been saying on this program since the beginning of the so-called recovery. You know, had we, and I go back to this because I think it's extremely important, had we had workers who were able to say, look, We demand some of the profits that are being generated. During the recession, wages were stolen from workers at an alarming pace. Their pensions were destroyed. Their health care was stolen. When the recovery happened, they didn't get those things back. Mm-hmm. And Emmanuel Sayas and his partner, they came up with the study in 2010. 93% of all new income gains, you know, the recovery, in the hands of the 1%. 2011, 121% of the new income gains went where? To the top 1%. You go, oh, how's it possible? How's it possible, 121%? They stole back wages and benefits from the workers. So we actually saw not a recovery, but a decrease. And it, to me, it's direct correlation to the fact that workers' rights and labor has been under assault for the last 30 years.
Fair play's gone. You know, it's just like your kid comes in and or all the kids come in and you've got, you know, six ice cream sandwiches and 12 kids. You cut the sandwiches in half. You don't say the six of you who got in here and shoved the other six out of the way, get them.
Well, I mean, it's
fair play. And we're not asking you to do something disgusting to your fellow man. We're asking you to say, hey, really, should I have all the ice cream sandwiches while that kid gets none just because, what, I'm my mommy's favorite? Or, I mean, that's just not fair.
Well, what we're seeing is the one guy taking all the ice cream and saying, hey, that other guy's going to lick your wrapper. I mean, that's basically what it is. You get to maybe get to lick the wrapper. And in fact, if you look,
you know
what?
You don't want them licking the wrapper because next time they're going to want an ice cream.
There you go.
They'll know what it's. Hey, that's pretty good. That thing you've been stealing out of my kid's mouth.
Yeah, I mean the reality is if you look at Sayas's numbers, they took the wrappers along with them.
Yeah, they did. They did. And then they complain because somebody gets an earned income credit and they buy a TV set. Well, you know what? You can't save $3,000 enough in the course of your lifetime when you make a minimum wage to actually talk about a $50,000 wedding for your child or sending them to college. I mean, those dreams that you think that the average American in the American way is supposed to have, the poor don't have them. They don't talk about when they go to college. They talk about when they get a tattoo.
Or when they get to the next day.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast, Stitcher on your smartphone. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country get not a dime to spare.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Five University of California medical centers could be impacted by a two-day strike next week. Last week, 13,000 technical workers for the centers voted overwhelmingly in favor of giving the AFSCME bargaining committee the authority to call a strike. According to the union, negotiations have reached a stalemate over unsafe working conditions, including staffing ratios. The university has said that the main issue hanging up negotiations is reforming the $24 billion unfunded pension liability. The union has countered that the university continues to provide executives with high salaries and pensions while asking for the workers to sacrifice and accept economic concessions. The union has released a study that shows an increase to executive payroll of $100 million since 2009. According to the union, the cuts to staffing impacts patient safety as it means less training for technicians and increased stress on employees. If the strike moves forward, the university could see staff walking the picket lines at all five medical centers and at student health centers at all 10 campuses across the state.
The United Mine Workers of America is fighting hard against an effort by Peabody Coal to destroy pension and health care for retired miners and their families. UMWA says Peabody spun off a company called Patriot Coal and set that up to fail so bankruptcy could be filed, allowing the company to shed $1.6 billion in promised pension and health care benefits for retired miners. UMWA President Cecil Roberts.
This might be legally correct, it's morally corrupt, and we're going to find out if the United States government, state governments, the court systems, I believe it's all right for corporations to be morally corrupt and to do their workers and their retirees and their widows like this.
Taken from a UMWA video, here are union miners, relatives, and UMWA leaders talking about the fight for fairness at Patriot Coal.
These men worked, and my husband worked, so that you could have a company and you can make your millions of dollars. Why just discard them and throw them away? And that's exactly what you're doing. It's like you're opening up a trash can and dumping them in the trash. And I can't see you doing people like that.
And just to take me and put me over here and then put my benefits in jeopardy. It's no good.
Until I die, I will fight. I'll do anything this union asks me to do. State might end up having to pay for my medical coverage if I end up in jail, but that's what it takes. That's what it takes.
We got some fighters in this union, and I think they're going to fight it, and I think we're going to win it.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
In the morning, get to work and fight yourself. And then somebody tells you that you're owned by someone else. So what's it all about? It's money! Work it out!
Oh, yeah. It's all about the money, and you look at this liquor store privatization scheme that our governor has dreamt up. And then, look, I don't even think it's his. This comes from the Commonwealth Foundation and the wealth that backs that group. It's all about how much asset can we take from taxpayers and how can we, well, make an extra buck. And that's what this is really all about. And this argument that, oh, we're going to save taxpayers and we're going to... Nonsense. This is all about privatizing something that's benefiting we, the taxpayers, benefiting we, the people. It's all about ideology. It has nothing, in my view, to do with consumer choice or any of that, the nonsensical arguments that they make, which is why I've asked Pennsylvania State Senator Jim Furlow to come talk to us. He's the Democratic chair of the Senate Law and Justice Committee. They oversee the Liquor Control Board and the state police as well. Jim, thanks for taking time for me.
Good evening, Rick.
So I look at this scheme, and I got to be honest with you. I don't see any of their arguments holding any real water. I remember the first one, it was going to bring us something, was it $2 billion?
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly, like you said earlier, this is about ideology, and this is about basically taking the public wealth, the public trust, and converting it to just a few large benefactors at the expense of a tremendous loss of family-sustaining jobs and really elimination of hundreds of small businesses, especially the beer distributors. You're going to see a monopolization and limited choice, and you're going to see higher prices. That's certainly been the case in the state of Washington, who's really regretting what they did a couple of years ago with so-called privatization. But fortunately, with our majority chairman, Chuck McElhaney, he's led a process, unlike the House, that kind of whipped this through and kind of put it off to the Senate and gave Corbett a theoretical win. You know, they just wanted to get rid of the debate and say they voted for privatization, all the Republicans. The Senate is really slowing down the process and really having formal public hearings. We had a tremendous hearing this week that you mentioned. We had six or seven different panelists, and it was diverse. I mean, there were people there, obviously, from Wegmans and Redner's, which are large supermarkets, Wegmans being much larger than the Redner's operations, which I think are out in the southeast area,
right,
not out here in the west. But, and, you know, the same story. I mean, they say, oh, they're going to create jobs. But basically, they're going to clear some floor space. They're going to remove some food products. And they're going to have their existing retail clerks, which are mainly non-union, pushing, you know, the sale of beer and wine. And for them, it's tremendous profit, and that comes at the expense of the beer distributors, which even some of the Republicans on the panel said, hey, let's be clear. If you do this, you're going to kill the beer distributors around the state. These are 1,600 plus. Many of them have been decades-long family operations. They're not going to succeed and survive with the Costcos and the Walmarts of the world or the Wegmans of the world. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but isn't that what the polling shows, that people really don't want to see liquor privatized? They don't want Jack Daniels on the impulse aisle next to the Tic Tacs. They just want to be able to buy a six-pack at the grocery store.
Well, one of the great presentations that we had this week was what was probably one of the remaining one large Pennsylvania distillery, and that's Joaquin's out east in the southeast communities. Mr. Cooper is the president, and Kevin O'Brien is the vice president of national sales. And they pretty much spoke very eloquently about this privatization will put them out of business. I mean, they enjoy the shelf life, and the special treatment they get from the Pennsylvania state store system pushes the Pennsylvania, in this case, the Joaquin products, which, as you know, is a big spread of different kinds of products. They're not going to be able to compete, and they're not going to be able to survive with the privatization, because they have a unique relationship with the LCB, who really pushes Pennsylvania products. And that was true for some of the Pennsylvania Winery Association representatives that spoke this week as well. The PLCB provides specific opportunities to really allow these small Pennsylvania wineries, which are growing in number, there's over 150 now around the state, and they're able to get their products on the shelf, especially in localized area. The PLCB makes a special effort. That's all going to go by the wayside. And, you know, I saw an interesting statistic that one of the presenters related, and that is that close to 50%, a little bit more, either don't buy alcohol at all, or they do it just on occasion, either for like New Year's Eve or maybe a holiday event. So that this thought that everybody's out there pounding the doors of the Corbett administration to privatize it is just not realistic. And we're going to kill a great system of jobs, a system that provides great cost products, convenience, as well as selection. And that will be lost on our privatization scheme.
Now, I got to tell you, Senator, I've yet to run into someone who says that we should privatize the liquor operations.
Well, here's the most thing. Here's one that's really upsetting. What are our priorities right now? You know, this administration has decimated the employment profile. We have over 18,000 teachers laid off and out of work in this state. You look at our employment numbers down significantly from the years of the Rendell administration, where we really made strategic investments and created partnerships with the private sector for job creation. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Corbett's numbers are so low. And why would you want to add the burden of yet another large group of family-sustaining jobs, unionized benefits, and put them on the unemployment line? It makes no sense to me. The priority right now for the Senate Democrats is the budget. We need to work on the budget. We need to work on a transportation bill, which has broad bipartisan support, especially when you include mass transit, SEPTA, and the Port Authority out here. And while we're messing around with this ideological debate about so-called privatization, it's really it's not the front and center issue that we really should be grappling with at this point.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, but I wanted to point out that this is such a bad idea that even with the dominance that the Republicans have in the legislature, it's still not. I would have thought if this was that much of a priority, that the governor has this kind of power and this kind of priority on this, it would have just steamrolled right through.
No, and in fact, you know, I have an alternative bill, a modernization and to some extent a liberalization bill, maintains the wholesale state store system, and it's Senate Bill 800. I encourage listeners to go online to my website, senatorfurlow.com, and really understand the depth of the destruction that Senate Bill House Bill 790 would be. That's the Corbett-Terzai proposal versus our modernization proposal, which has all Democrats, 23, and a couple of senators also on the Republican aisle on board with us as well. So we're slowing down the process. Chuck McElhaney is the chairman, deserves some credit. He's for some type of liberalization and privatization, but not for eliminating the wholesale operation as presented in the Terzai Corbett bill. So we have another set of hearings, and apparently the governor may show up in the month of June at one of these hearings, and that's going to be an interesting
discourse,
I can assure you.
I mean, some of the things in your bill that I found interesting is you wanted to open some more stores, and you wanted to put some within grocery stores, I guess.
Well, locational issues to get prime spots either within or next door to supermarkets to address some of the convenience issue, direct wine shipment. You know, the part of the crowd that's out there yelling about privatization are really what I call the wine aficionados, and I mean that respectfully. You know, they want to be able to get a case from Napa Valley, send it back, or order it from New York warehouse or whatever, a specialty brand that maybe is not carried, even though, you know, the LCB online can get you anything you want. You know, so our bill would allow that to happen, direct wine shipment. It's a Senator Farnese bill. We've incorporated into our comprehensive bill, Senate Bill 800 for modernization. And, you know, we can deal with pricing and procurement issues. You know, as you know, there's a bureaucracy that takes to do all the ordering and run the state store system. Unfortunately, that same bureaucracy also exists in state government and the Department of General Services. You know, we should let the state store system run like the business it needs to be. It's a $2 billion business. It doesn't need to, a lot of the administrative functions don't need to be replicated, you know, in the Department of General Services. That's just a waste of energy and resources, quite honestly.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Pennsylvania State Senator Jim Furlow. He's the Democratic chair of the state. The Senate Law and Justice Committee, they oversee the Liquor Control Board and the state police. You know, I look at this, and I got to be honest, I go back from as a kid growing up in Cleveland where you could get, you know, you could get alcohol and any beer in any grocery store and any gas station. In fact, you could buy a single can of cold beer driving through the gas station, kind of made drinking and driving a team sport. I, as a parent, don't want to see that kind of access that I had. And what's surprising to me, and maybe as, you know, as a state senator, you see more of this. I'm not seeing the religious community as much. I'm not seeing the social conservatives as much.
Hearing we had Mothers Against Drunk Driving, we did have the police bureau, the state police, the Pennsylvania Association Chiefs of Police. There are many public safety officials that loathe the idea of privatization and the proliferation of mom-and-pop liquor stores, especially at the convenience store level. So there's growing opposition there.
No, I know you see it. I know you see it, but I don't hear it in the media. I don't hear it on the radio or on television. I don't see. All I see is, hey, this is a good thing. Get
us out. First of all, you know, to the credit of UFCW, they are beginning to run some of their own ads. And by the way, UFCW is always attacked. But, you know, where's this money coming from? Well, obviously, it's union wages and benefits and people that pay in to protect their jobs and protect the system. I respect that. You know, we never know where the money's coming from Commonwealth Foundation. If you try to ask them where their grant money is and who runs that organization, you'll get a silence, believe me. At least with unions, you know where it's coming from. Yep. People voluntarily make contributions because they believe in the, you know, sustainability of their jobs and, you know, what unions are all about and, you know, the moral imperative that unions present. Try to find out who funds the Commonwealth Foundation. Good luck, Rick. You'd be a great journalist if you could find that one out.
Yeah, I mean, you have your suspicions, you know, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association,
yeah.
A number of those anti-worker groups. Yeah, absolutely. You can make the assumptions, but they don't have to tell us.
I can tell you, representing the urban core of the city of Pittsburgh in a 3-county area, including small towns as well as the rural communities I represent in Westmoreland and Armstrong County, you know, we don't want to see a proliferation of liquor everywhere. And, you know, and just this, we need to dispel another notion. People are saying, well, there's no convenience here. You can't get access to buy beer. You know, Texas has 24 million people. We have about 12 million in our state. We're the second state in priority in terms of, the second largest state as far as the number of outlets that people can buy beer, meaning taverns and restaurants, the distributors and the like. So, you know, there's a lot of accessibility to beer. It doesn't need to be at every Sheets and Kogo's. I think
that's
really going to be the downer for public
safety. Senator, as an adult, I know where I want beer if I want it. I know where to get alcohol if I want it. I'm happy that it's in a controlled way, and I'm even more happy that there's some $500 million a year in taxes that it pays that I don't have to.
When we have a growing emergence of these microbreweries that are developing around the state, to their credit, they're great folks and very exciting opportunities for beer drinking, especially a lot of younger people. They like the microbrews and all that it represents and part of the revitalization of many of our smaller towns and the urban communities. That's going to be lost. I mean, if you go to the supermarkets, they're going to clear shelves, they're going to put beer on pallets, and they're going to cater to the bottom line. They're going to push the lowest product they can get at the best price. So you're going to see a lot of folks that are relying for opportunities to have beer or wine sold, and they're going to be shut out of the marketplace. And I just can't understand why we'd want to kill so many small businesses the beer distributors all around the state. And my bill also helps out the restaurants and taverns. Restaurants and taverns are great neighborhood institutions. They provide a lot of jobs. They're tremendous small businesses. I'm sick and tired of Republicans always touting, Corbett included, that he's for small businesses, when really this whole scheme of Terzai and Corbett really wipes out thousands of small businesses across the state. And restaurants are very exciting places. They're part of the neighborhood fabric of a community and provide a lot of jobs. And our modernization bill would actually allow them to gain some profit with a greater discount because they're really in partnership with the state store system. And we would liberalize and do some package reform. We believe beer distributors right now should be able to break up a case so that they want to sell half a case of microbrews and vice versa. If we want to see their taverns and restaurants sell up to a case and let them break up the case, that would provide some greater opportunity for the consumers and really increase the profit margin for both of those small business communities.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Republicans love to talk about small business and how much they love them. The only small businesses I see them really liking are Range Resources and Royal Dutch Shell, if you consider them small businesses.
Well, I have a moratorium bill on further drilling in the Marcellus Shale until we take a step back. We have about 10,000 wells either ready to drill or already have been drilled, and there's no really practical assessment of health and environmental risk, and we see countless so-called accidents or incidents. Even yesterday in Brooklyn Township, somewhere out east, I think there was an explosion of one of the compressor stations. It wasn't even reported. They wanted to keep it hidden to DEP and local public safety officials. So there's just a lot of problems in the state, and Corbett's in no way able. In fact, this administration is really coming apart at the seams. There's numerous people that have left, secretaries flipping out of the system, new people. You know, there's a lot of turnover, and that doesn't exactly bode well for the stability of the leadership of his administration.
Well, all we can hope for is this is actually one-term Tom, and we get rid of him, and we start fixing things, and maybe take part of the House back so we can actually get some things done.
That would be great.
Last question.
This too shall pass.
Yeah, we'll see. Last question I've got for you. You know, what do we do? How do we stop this privatization scheme? What do you need?
Well, like you said, I think the state legislators, especially the House members, especially many of them that come from smaller rural communities, I think they're completely out of step with the feelings of their constituents on the proliferation of liquor and the proliferation of beer sales everywhere. So I would encourage folks in your listening audience to get out and communicate to, regardless of Democrat or Republican, they need to, you know, legislators need to hear from people about this whole issue. I encourage them to get a little bit more educated on some of the actual details. People say they're for privatization. They don't really know what they just have this whimsical view about privatization. I think they need to understand the impact issues, and if they review some of the public hearings that we've conducted, they'll get a good insight about this is not just an easy, flip of the switch. There are a lot of societal impact issues, a lot of loss of income and jobs to small businesses. So this is a weighty issue that we should be taking a lot of time to discuss. And again, it's really not a priority for the Senate, both the D's and the R's. This is not our priority. Our priority is the budget
and
trying to come to grips with a transportation bill, which would put jobs into every county in this great state.
That's what we need, and I'm glad you're there. Senator, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. You have a good day.
Look forward to having you back again, Senator Jim Furlow. Quick break, right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Step right up, folks, and take your chances in the amazing new American workplace. Constantly high unemployment. Low wages always. No employee bargaining power. A corporate paradise. This paradise has enriched the already rich investor elite and rewarded top executives with multimillion-dollar pay packages. It also lets corporations treat the masses of people in today's workforce like Kleenexes. Just use them up and toss them. After all, they're cheap, plentiful, and disposable. Indeed, taskmasters in suits have now redefined the term hired to mean that you're tethered to a corporation full-time, but you actually work and get paid for only the few hours a week when the boss calls. This nefarious practice, known as on-call shifts, is all the rage among national retail chains. Such giants as Abercrombie and Fitch, Gap, and Urban Outfitters require employees to work without set schedules and to be available to have their string yanked at any time, day or night, even on weekends, with as little as 2 hours' notice. Likewise, if customer traffic in a store is slow, retail workers who got dressed up, battled the morning commute, and reported on time can simply be sent away after an hour or so, with no pay for their lost hours. A recent survey of some 400 retail employees in New York City found that only 17% have a set schedule. Those with no set hours also have no set income and no life. If you're at the beck and call of the boss, what do you do with your children? How do you make a doctor's appointment? What if you're taking a class or trying to work a second job? This is Jim Hightower saying, this shameful on-call practice says that the corporation owns you, and that abuse of workers is a legitimate business practice in America. To help stop it, contact RetailActionProject.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Fuzzy math. It's fuzzy math. Fuzzy math. I'm practicing fuzzy math. So long as we need to fudge the numbers and not tell the truth. For diplomacy to be effective, lies must be credible.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show.
Best way to win an election.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So the Philly Inquirer came out with an editorial extra today, which I found fairly interesting. Talking about the governor's pension scheme. Again, you go back with the pensions, you go with the liquor, the lottery, you know, all of this stuff. Remember the jobs pledge in 2010? Our more jobs governor saying jobs. Remember that? All it's been is how do we destroy jobs? Well, anyway, the pension editorial pretty much says, look, folks, taxpayers, you're getting screwed. They write, it would weaken employee retirement funds, eventually cost taxpayers $179 million more per year, add $5 billion to unfunded pension liabilities by 2019, and even more afterwards. They say the guise of a solution, well, it's going to make the problem worse. He says, you know, the reality is the legislature should reject Corbett's plan. And it says, you know, probably the scheme that Corbett's come up with probably would not even survive a legal challenge. So here, again, making the problems worse and pushing it all down the road. And I think that's the scheme, Pat. I think that's the point, not just on the state level, but on the federal level. You've got people who don't believe in government. They will come in. This is what's blown my mind. Why would you ever vote for somebody who tells you, I don't believe in what I'm going to do, and I'm going to destroy it? Why would you vote for someone? It's like going to a brain surgery and a surgeon who says, I don't believe in knives.
Yeah, I don't like my job.
Yeah.
I don't want to do my job. I don't like my job. If you elect me, the first thing I'm going to do is try and find a way out of doing my job. If you hire me to be your brain surgeon, I'm going to try really hard just to take out your kidney. You know, I mean, it's absolutely absurd. But, you know, the thing that you were saying about kicking the can down the road, that's because we're thinking like human beings. These guys are bought and paid for by corporations. A corporation doesn't have tomorrow. A corporation has, and this is not, I'm not saying this is bad. I'm just saying it's a fact. It has dividends to stockholders. It has bottom line. That's its concerns. That's why you have governments regulate corporations, because corporations can't think about tomorrow. We have, up in Maine, we have forests, or we did. And back in the day, we tried to ban clear cutting, because you'd go in and you'd take every tree for however many acres and you'd leave effectively a desert.
Stops.
Right? But, you know, the sun beats down. Guess what? For millions of years, seeds fell in the shade and germinated. You can't get the same kind of tree to grow in direct sunlight. So forests don't regenerate, right? People, when the forests were owned by people who were going to leave the land to their grandchildren, the forests are effectively managed. When they're owned by
huge multinational corporations who are shipping
from
it over,
South Africa,
sending it to China to be turned into furniture to be brought, they don't give a rat's
behind. Not even furniture. They're chipped. That stuff is turned into paper pulp, actually, before it even leaves the woods.
Wow.
South African pulp and paper, right? That's who's going to turn your forest. It's going to liquidate the resource. That's what it's called, liquidating the resource. It's not called cutting down the trees. It's not called making jobs. It's not called making good-paying jobs. And then they'll bring in undocumented workers to clean the slash. And they'll get a fine for that. But in the meantime, they will have paid them $2 or $3 an hour. No unemployment compensation, no unemployment insurance.
No workers' comp.
Nothing, because they're not on the books.
No Social Security, none of that.
No. And so that's the point. So why did the corporation do that? Because it's a corporation. Because that's its job.
But
just like
people?
A squid is supposed to shoot out ink. No.
Aren't they
they're
people?
Not people. No, that was wrong. Just like Dred Scott was a person, the Supreme Court's wrong from time to time. The Supreme Court said Dred Scott decision can't be handed down because he's not a man and only men can file lawsuits. Well, we know Dred Scott was a man. And we also know that corporations aren't people, even though the Supreme Court said they are.
But corporations are people.
No.
Yes.
No,
Rick. Mitt Romney told me they were.
He drove to Toronto with his dog on the car.
Yeah, so...
My favorite Mitt Romney story. If you need to know more about that man and still consider voting for him,
it shows he's decisive. He made a decision. He stuck with it.
My favorite thing was his wife, another rocket scientist. His wife says, "The dog loved those trips. You should have seen the way it freaked out when it saw the dog carrier." Yeah, no kidding, because you were putting it on the roof. That wasn't excitement. That was fear.
Well, the Griswolds put Aunt Edna on the roof.
She was already dead. That was a great movie.
I love that movie.
They're Griswolds for president.
There you go. Griswolds for president. Also today, a new Secretary of Education was named, the Superintendent of Cumberland Valley School District, who I know very little about. I'm sure in the days and weeks ahead we will find out if this guy's as bad as the last guy. I'm assuming, since this governor has put him up for the job, I'm assuming he's just as bad. But we will see. Give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't know that he could be any worse than Tom was.
I want to throw one thing in, though, about the liquor, if we can just go back to that for 1 minute.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't mind getting all liquored up.
I lived in several states where liquor stores were privatized and the liquor sales were privatized. Okay, all that profit that used to be your tax revenue becomes profit to somebody else.
Walmart. Or 7-Eleven.
Or anybody. Or everybody. Absolutely everybody. When he said you could buy it at every corner of the street, absolutely everywhere, from Rite Aid
to Washington, D.C.
Right. So the only thing is, people don't care. You kept saying, where are the people that care about this? They don't care. And I remember a candidate in one of the states I lived in where this was legal saying, people don't want the coffee brandy put in the same carriage with the diapers. Yeah, they do. And if there's not enough money, it's not the coffee brandy that's going to come out of the carriage. It's the diapers. And so all of this...
That's an interesting point.
It's true. And the cigarettes. Cigarettes will make it to the cashier, too. But that's what's going to happen. And it's happened everywhere. And really good people lose really good jobs.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, and this is where the hypocritical part of me comes out, the parent part. When I was a kid, you know, 14, 15 years old, we'd walk into the Dairy Mart or the Lawson's there in Cleveland, and we'd steal it.
Yeah.
You walk out with a bottle of wine or you walk out with a bottle of liquor, and Yeah, 14, 15, I don't want my kids having that kind of ability. In fact, you know, a lot of times, by the time I hit 14 or 15, I was a pretty big kid. I just walk into the store because, hey, there are a lot of people who are selling beer. I'd buy a case of beer, the crowd pleaser, Jobel, the 30-pack. And we'd go down to the park and get all drunk and all the problems that come along with it. As a parent, don't want it.
And our way of treating our kids is so irrational, you know. I mean, I brought up two kids. My kids are 26 and 27. And I think that you have to have all these open conversations with your kids and not close your eyes to the fact that all of that is possible.
Yep.
I mean, you're not saying, I never did it, so I'm, you know, there
oh,
are
no,
people.
I never did it.
There are people who are in such denial about their own youth, you know. And you got to say to your kids, I know what this is like. I know what that temptation's like. And I'll tell you what, right now, you can screw up really now.
Especially
today.
You can screw up now. Absolutely.
Yeah. Those contracts they make you sign at schools?
Nuts.
Those things upset me more than anything. Like, I'm the parent. I'll punish them.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you. We're going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. 1-888-520-RICK. Right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
Just like you or me, Earth casts a shadow. Earth's shadow extends into space in the direction opposite the sun.
There are several good times to think about and be aware of Earth's shadow. For example, you can see Earth's shadow any evening ascending in the east. It ascends at the same rate that the sun is setting below the western horizon. The shadow is a deep blue-gray, and it's darker than the blue of the twilight sky. The pink band above the shadow is called the Belt of Venus. And just so you'll recognize it, remember that the shadow is curved in just the same way that the whole Earth is curved.
You can also see Earth's shadow during an eclipse of the moon. Earth's shadow extends so far into space that it can touch the moon. That's what a lunar eclipse is. It's the moon within Earth's shadow. During a lunar eclipse, a small amount of light from the sun filters through our planet's atmosphere onto Earth's shadow on the moon. That's why, at the middle part of a total lunar eclipse, the shadow on the moon looks reddish.
There's a third time to think about seeing Earth's shadow, and that is, night is a shadow. When night falls, you're standing within the shadow of Earth. So check out Earth's shadow, in the east just after sunset, brushing the moon's face during a lunar eclipse. Or think about it when you're standing outside in darkness after sunset. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
proud supporter of the union workers who fought, bled, and died for your weekend. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, look out, my daughter. Look out, my son. 60 years have been undone. Hang on, Wisconsin. Hang on.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Somebody check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So we've seen workers take to the streets in New York. We've seen them take to the streets in Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit, all of these fast food workers, all of these workers who work in these restaurants saying, you know what? Minimum wage isn't cutting it. And, you know, they're saying we need to have a push for a living wage. And what I've been saying from the beginning is, look, you know, those factory jobs that built the middle class of the 50s, 60s, and into today, the truck driving jobs that produced middle class incomes, those were not middle class jobs to begin with. That was a long fight for union recognition, a long fight for contract negotiations. And what we need to do is we need to make the jobs that are here and here to stay, we need to make those the next generation of living wage jobs. And I don't know if you saw the EPI study that came out and said, look, you know, by 2020, a quarter of the jobs in this country will be low wage jobs. And if you look at since the recession, the jobs that have been added, nearly two-thirds of the jobs added low-wage jobs. So how do we get to that point to where, you know what, we have a middle class and respect work, even, you know, at the drive-thru window? Well, you take to the streets, and that's what they've done today in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. That's why I've asked Mike Winder, director of the African-American Roundtable, to come talk to us about today's activities. Mike, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So tell me, what happened today?
What happened today is exactly what you explained in your prelude. You know, workers took to the streets demanding for better wages, better benefits, a better way of life, better way to sustain their families. You know, they are tired of trying to survive off $7.25 an hour. It just can't happen. In order to support local in our economy, people have to start spending money. Well, Rick, people don't have money.
Yep.
People are working these low-wage jobs. And you mentioned a good statistic when you said 25% of these jobs in the country will be low-wage jobs by 2020. Well, right now in Milwaukee, that number is already near 40%.
Wow.
So, you know, you're looking at a city that was pretty much one of the basins for manufacturing jobs. You know, the beer industry in the 60s and 70s was booming. Those jobs are gone. And sadly, a lot of those jobs, like you said in your preview, are not coming back.
Well,
but what we have to do is make these jobs, the jobs that are here, the jobs that are available, good-paying jobs.
Yeah, and what are you hearing from the workers that were out on the streets today? Because, you know, I've known a number of fast food workers who, you know, to be honest, the minimum wage that they make, the short hours, the erratic hours, I know some of them were homeless.
But, you know, a lot of these workers have very, very dire economic conditions, Rick. A lot of these workers have families to support. You know, the misconception out there is that these jobs are teenager jobs. You know, that might have been the case back in the day, but now these are jobs that are being occupied by 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, trying to sustain families, trying to put food on the table, trying to put clothes on the kids' backs. It's not $7.25 is not enough to survive.
So what is the number? What are we looking for?
Well, the workers took to the streets today. They want $15 an hour in a union, and they want to be able to do their work, have their work treated with dignity, being treated with respect by their employers, making it so that people know that all work deserves fair pay. And these workers work hard. You know, they're getting mistreated by customers. The customers are always right. a lot of them are getting burned by fryers. A lot of them are just going through conditions that a lot of us would not do for that amount of money.
Yeah.
But yet and still, they are getting that amount of money. So what we're telling people today is that we need to have all hands on deck. The community needs to support these workers. Clergy, the faith community needs to support these workers. The local elected officials need to state, local elected officials, and federal elected officials need to support these workers. And they need to be able to unionize and have $15 an hour.
You know, I'm happy to see New York, Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit, now Milwaukee. I want to see this catch like wildfire and spread across the country because, you know, to me, it's that kind of organizing. It's that kind of in the streets that I think are going to change things. So let me ask you, how long was this in the works? You know, it's been the last couple of months. We've seen these other places go. How long has it been in the works in Milwaukee?
Well, look, this became an idea back during President Obama's State of the Union address when he called for Congress to raise the minimum wage. But Rick, you and I both know that nothing's getting done in Washington. There's a stalemate. There are powerful special interests that's blocking any type of progress, any type of economic justice for the working class, for the middle class. And we see fat cat corporations racking in billions upon billions of dollars, but none of that money is trickling down. You know, conservatives love trickling down economics. Where's the money trickling down to these people making $7.25 an hour? It's just not there. So what we said was, we are going to take to the streets and have people organize their workplaces in order to get the money that they deserve. You know, we're not going to wait on Congress. If we wait on Congress, it's going to be too late.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I've been trickled on. You know, the reality is I've been trickled on, but it's not the rivers of golden honey that they told me. It's yellow, all right, but it's not golden honey.
Exactly.
And, you know, here's the thing. I remember as candidate Obama, the minimum wage that he wanted to raise was a sight bit higher than the $9 that he said in the State of the Union. And for me, I'm of the mindset that, you know, I don't really know that the law is going to be what's going to take care of this. Passing another minimum wage increase, only to have it eaten away by years of, eroded by inflation just doesn't seem to be the right way to go. I'm with you. I say we take to the streets and in mass numbers. And as consumers, we turn away from these fast food places and these big box retailers until they come around.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, we weren't out in the streets even calling for that today. Now this could escalate to that point where we're calling for people to start turning away from these corporations. We weren't even calling for that today. We're calling for the corporations to take notice that the power is in the people. Yes, you may have the billions upon billions of dollars, but we have the people who are making the billions and billions of dollars for you. Everyone goes to McDonald's. Everyone wants their fries done right, their burgers done right. They want the bathrooms clean. They want nice service. Well, why not pay these workers what they deserve for that service?
What do you say to the argument that I'm sure the industry is saying, we just can't afford it. We just don't have the money.
Well, that's just not fact. We see record profits from Walmart, from Burger King, from McDonald's, from Wendy's. I think I saw a statistic the other day where Wendy's profits were the best that they've ever had. I think that was the case. In 2012, their profits were the best that they ever had. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's getting to the point where these corporations are spewing out facts that really aren't factual. I mean, they're just not meeting up to what we know. What we know is that they have the money, they're not giving it to the workers, and the workers deserve more.
Well, what I saw, a statistic, the CEO of McDonald's, he made in excess of a million hours, pay of a million hours last year. And I'm going, you know, no worker could, you know, the right loves to say, well, you just need to work hard, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you work a little bit of extra hour, a little overtime, like that woman, Gina Reinhart, the billionaire from Australia, who said, we need to do away with the minimum wage. If people are willing to work for $2 an hour, we should let them, because they just need to work longer. They smoke and drink too much, so they should work more. And I'm going, there aren't a million hours in the year. So even if I was willing to work, and look, I'm a workaholic, but there just aren't that many hours in the year for me to make that kind of money.
I mean, to me, Rick, the minimum wage is simple. What the minimum wage tells me is that me as an employer, if I could pay you less, I would.
Yep.
But the state regulates that I pay you this much amount of money. And the fact is, this amount of money is not enough to sustain a family. We need family-supporting jobs to spur our local economy's growth. Nobody's able to spend any money that they don't have, and that's what's been going on.
Well, I give you guys nothing but credit. The website, raiseupmke.org, for more information on it. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Mike Wilder's name. It'll take you right there. Mike, best of luck to this. And in the next step, please remember us. Come back and tell us how things are going.
Thank you so much, Rick.
I appreciate it. Quick break. Right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. A million hours. A million hours. Right back.
We gotta do it today. No more madness and cruelty. No more mystery. We gotta get it tonight.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep into Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the anti-immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strike breakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours, in a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day, and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in Labor's Forgotten Massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer Massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
When they pay you minimum wage, you know what they're trying to tell you? Is like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So, yeah, a million hours. The McDonald's CEO made $8.75 million last year. $8.75 million. Off of the backs of low-wage workers. And you remember Papa John during the 2012 run-up?
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy, and this is the problem with the country. We look to this guy, go, "Oh, wow, he's fantastic." How do he make his money? He made his money screwing pizza delivery guys and the people who make the pizza. We've figured out how to put these people on pedestals, these people who...
You know, I did a column for, I don't remember who it was for anymore, a couple of years ago, that we could actually give no-cost health insurance to every Taco Bell worker if tacos were 5 cents more. Okay. The big guys have to stay 8.75 millionaires, right? They're never going to say, "I can do without my fourth valet or my 16th butler or my, you know, $90,000
shower curtain."
But I, as a human being who probably has had one too many tacos, I can pay 5 cents more a taco so that the guy selling me the taco doesn't have a herpes sore on his mouth while he's waiting on me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it... If we can't get inside the minds of people who are so greedy that we just can't understand them, so our brains say they don't exist, that's what happens when you can't imagine something, right? Your brain says, "That's not possible," and you get on with your day. Well, it is possible. These guys have $8 million. They don't care about you. Get over it. And you could care about each other and say, "It's worth 5 cents more for a taco."
But I don't eat tacos. But yeah, I mean, but the
whatever.
Papa John thing is on there because they said he said he'd have to raise the price of a pizza 11 cents, and I go, well, even if that was true and they found out later it was not, I'm willing to pay 11 cents more.
Absolutely. And those stupid falling prices signs at Walmart, it has to be $4.88. It can't be $4.95. And people buy into this thing that it's not possible for them to stay in business. You know what they'll do? They will go into a town and have done it. It's probably all done. It doesn't need to be done anymore. And they will lose money until the other businesses are out of business. They will purposefully lose money, and then you'll pay what they want you to pay. And, I mean, really, honestly, walk into a Walmart. Is someone going to be nice to you? Is a lovely greeter going to greet you? Yes, they are. You don't deserve it. You don't deserve it because you don't care that they can't go to a dentist.
And what's interesting to me is, you know, you brought up Walmart, and you look at the Walton family, the, you know, the six sperm lottery winners. And you know, they, who, in my view, the hardest day's work they've ever done was making their way through the birth canal. They control. Those handful of people control more wealth than the bottom 40% of our nation. And you stop and think about it, that's 120 million people.
Yeah.
I think I have a problem with that. And you're telling me that you know, we don't have the money. We're broke. We're broke, Pat. There's no money. Sorry. Lights are going out.
I know.
Got to steal food stamps from those kids because, you know, they're just lazy.
Well, that is the part that's so sad in my mind. And I was running a homeless shelter at the time that the stimulus was put in place. And I can tell you it worked. And why I'm the only person who's basically got a pulpit, whether it's writing or here or wherever, to tell you it worked, and I'm the only one saying it. That's the thing that makes me angry. That's the thing that makes this look like it's all an inside job. They did jumpstart the economy. They did do a bunch of New Deal stuff. They did put people... We're going to Salt Lake City, right?
Yeah.
There's a beautiful wall around Salt Lake City. Have you seen it?
No, I
haven't. Pictures of it? Okay. Beautiful wall around Salt Lake City. You know what that is?
What?
That's the Great Depression. Because what happened was the people of Salt Lake City, their Mormon brothers and sisters, they said, you know what, you're not going to starve. Like, oh, no, no, we can't take a handout. They said, okay, well, we need a wall. So they hired everybody to build a wall, and they built this beautiful wall that goes around the city, and everybody got a paycheck, and everybody went home, and their kids were fed. And J. Michael Curley, the Irish mayor of Boston, who was reelected while in prison, only seated elected official to run for office and be reelected the entire campaign season in prison. When it snowed during the Great Depression, he paid people to shovel. He didn't send out the trucks. He paid people to shovel the streets so that people would have an income and they would have a job and they wouldn't feel like they were on the public dole.
And that's what I've always been in favor of. And I've had some people say, well, you know, we need these welfare programs because, you know, we need them.
We do. In a lot of cases, we absolutely do.
But for me, this, as someone who grew up in that environment, a job meant so much. And I do believe that you need to have programs like that. And government, in my view, has to be the employer of last resort.
The welfare that's killing us is corporate welfare.
Absolutely.
And the welfare that is absolutely needed by people who, or public assistance, these are necessities people are getting. They aren't, that's George Lykoff, Don't Think of an Elephant, fabulous book. The language we use is important. We call them services. People aren't getting massages. People are getting food, a roof. They're getting necessities.
Right.
These are necessities. And if people could afford them themselves, they would purchase them.
And that's why I say, you know, and I'm in no way diminishing the need, but I am saying that I do believe there is a therapeutic quality to work, and that having been able to make your own way is important in giving people dignity. Because I remember as a kid having to go into a store with one of these obnoxious play money looking food stamps.
Yeah.
And the reaction that you got from the cashier and the people, there was no dignity in that, and you had to swallow your pride.
No, and there are an awful lot of people who think you deserve that for being poor. You deserve to have no dignity. You deserve to be humiliated.
And this is why I say there has to be a path, a way for people to maintain that dignity through the therapeutic quality of work. And look, you know, when Clinton signed the welfare reform, which was a screw job to the bottom end of the economic scale, I said what it should have come with is a jobs plan, not just a, hey, go get a job. It should have been, okay, well, we're going to set up a way because you're going to have child care. So your job is to watch five people's kids, and your job is to watch five people's
when
kids.
When I ran for governor the first time, we came up with a thing that was called Fair Care, which was a combination of welfare and child care. It was called Fair Care. And there were an awful lot of moms who would like, or dads who would like to stay home with their kids. But you know what? Maybe you don't want the lady up the street watching your kids because you don't want them just parked in front of a TV set in a cigarette-filled room or whatever your fantasy is of what this was. They have child life classes in every high school. They're mandated. Send these people who are going to be the fair care providers to the child life classes that are in all the high schools. Train them how to take care of someone else's children. Let them start their own small business. And then allow them to get five times the benefit. They've got five times the kids. Let them get, instead of $205 or $315, let them get $2,000 a month for being a fair care provider. And after 5 years, they've got the experience they need to have their own small business.
That's a great idea.
But all of that, but it will never be because it's not punishing.
Well, that's the point. But I go back to A. Philip Randolph, who was furious when they came out with the handout programs. Said, look, we don't want handouts. We want jobs.
And that's fine as long as the job is better than a mother taking care of her children. And that's the other thing we have just decided isn't any good anymore. When welfare was invented, it was after World War II, and an awful lot of guys didn't come home. And we said, you know what? The best job that mom can do is to raise her own children. And we provided for mothers to do that. Now we think it's best to warehouse children and make the mothers go get some meaningless job for $7.25 an hour.
Yeah.
And by the way, the family loses their health care.
And loses everything. And you get the idiots like this Daryl Metcalf, mad cow, who's got... You know, he does his mad cow minute. And, well, listen to this.
Welfare spending in Pennsylvania is out of control. Just the proposed increase to welfare spending in this year's budget is greater than the cost to fund the entire legislative branch. And according to the former Secretary of Welfare, expenditures are also expected to increase due to Obamacare. Increased funding for welfare has already ballooned over 50% in the last 10 years, and welfare consumes nearly 39% of this year's proposed budget.
Yeah, because the budget doesn't have the wars in it.
Well, it's the state budget. And you know, they throw all of it into welfare, taking care of seniors, taking care of the disabled, taking care of people truly in need. To him, it's just not important. They should all go out and get jobs. He goes on to say,
we are spending more money on welfare than is being spent on educating the children of Pennsylvania. Taxpayers cannot sustain this burden. I recently received a letter from several former governors from both parties encouraging legislators to support renaming the Department of Public Welfare to the Department of Human Services.
No,
this change would come at taxpayer expense.
I can't do that. That'd be too expensive. Now he cares about education, the guy who said that.
But when you give money to the education establishment like this, it's like throwing it into a black hole.
Throwing money, education, into a black hole.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, back when the Soviet Union existed, they had a larger military budget than we did, which everybody was screaming about. Their military budget included their education. The Department of Education was in their military because they said that we were going to beat them in the arms race, and we were going to beat them in the space race, we were going to beat them in all these races because we were educating our children. And so they rolled it into their military budget basically to make the point that it was the best defense the country could have. And my father, who was educated on the GI Bill, who was a butcher, right, educated in the GI Bill, paid a lot more taxes as the chief of medicine when he got done his education in the GI Bill.
As a butcher.
Oh, yeah. They got all that money back.
Tip of the nose, short-sighted. Quick break. Back with Hour 3. Stick around. If you missed any portion of the program, RickSmithShow.com. Stitcher on your smartphone. Right back after this. You are listening to the Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Five University of California medical centers could be impacted by a two-day strike next week. Last week, 13,000 technical workers for the centers voted overwhelmingly in favor of giving the AFSCME bargaining committee the authority to call a strike. According to the union, negotiations have reached a stalemate over unsafe working conditions, including staffing ratios. The university has said that the main issue hanging up negotiations is reforming the $24 billion unfunded pension liability. The union has countered that the university continues to provide executives with high salaries and pensions while asking for the workers to sacrifice and accept economic concessions. The union has released a study that shows an increase to executive payroll of $100 million since 2009. According to the union, the cuts to staffing impacts patient safety as it means less training for technicians and increased stress on employees. If the strike moves forward, the university could see staff walking the picket lines at all five medical centers and at student health centers at all 10 campuses across the state.
The United Mine Workers of America is fighting hard against an effort by Peabody Coal to destroy pension and health care for retired miners and their families. UMWA says Peabody spun off a company called Patriot Coal and set that up to fail so bankruptcy could be filed, allowing the company to shed $1.6 billion in promised pension and health care benefits for retired miners. UMWA President Cecil Roberts.
This might be legally correct. Is morally corrupt, and we're going to find out if the United States government, state governments, the court systems, I believe it's all right for corporations to be morally corrupt and to do their workers and their retirees and their widows like this.
Taken from a UMWA video, here are union miners, relatives, and UMWA leaders talking about the fight for fairness at Patriot Coal.
These men worked, and my husband worked, so that you could have a company and you can make your millions of dollars. Why just discard them and throw them away? And that's exactly what you're doing. It's like you're opening up a trash can and dumping them in the trash. And I can't see you doing people like that.
And just to take me and put me over here and then put my benefits in jeopardy. It's no good.
Until I die, I will fight. I'll do anything this union asks me to do. State might end up having to pay for my medical coverage if I end up in jail, but that's what it takes. That's what it takes.
We got some fighters in this union, and I think they're going to fight it, and I think we're going to win it.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the way she is. Everything's raisin, but the way she is. Gasoline, groceries, and our Hades. Everything's raisin, but the way she is.
Welcome back to the third hour of the program. If you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. Also, Stitcher on your smartphone. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So as we said earlier, look, by 2020, what is it? A quarter of all jobs in this country will be low-paying jobs. Since the recession, the so-called recovery, two-thirds of the jobs that have been created have been in the low-wage sector. That's the service sectors. You know, remember the grand Reagan dream? We're going to move from that dirty manufacturing, that dirty making stuff, to an economy of, hey, you cut my grass and I'll wash your windows. Not really working out all that great. But as I've been saying, look, you know those factory jobs? Those were low-paying jobs at one point, too. So truck driving, all those middle-class jobs we think of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, all those middle-class jobs, they were made middle-class jobs by saying, no, we're going to stand, we're going to take to the streets, we're going to fight, we're going to bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions, which is why I've asked Grant Fraser. He is one of the cleaners at a Kohl's in the Minneapolis, Minnesota area. Grant, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Rick.
I understand recently you and your fellow cleaners have voted to go on strike at Kohl's.
Yes, it's definitely something that we've been looking into for a while. It's not just Kohl's. It's Target and Verizon and Home Depot and many other companies that, you know, have all these different contracts for stores.
So, you know, and I look at this and I say, look, you know, these are jobs that I think you should be able to make a living wage, just put a roof over your head, food on the table, support a family. I'm guessing these contractors that work for these big boxes don't see it that way.
No, I think they see it as just an opportunity for profit in a kind of downsizing industry.
So in looking at the work that you guys do, and, you know, as I've said, you know, the industries that are left as we've allowed manufacturing to be shipped overseas, the jobs that you guys do, this is hard back-breaking work.
Yeah, it's definitely cleaning, you know, about 6, 7, 8 hours a day.
And these are very fairly profitable companies that you guys are working for.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the contracts, the money that they bring it from those, but I feel like they definitely could push a little bit more our way.
So if you look at this, and you know, one of the questions that I've had for a lot of these when you're talking about contractors who work for these big companies, if in the event you guys, you know, bargain for better wages, what's to stop the Kohl's and the Targets from doing away with those contractors?
I think they just want to keep their hands clean and not deal with any of the problems that these contractors have to deal with.
So how do we help?
Really, it's just supporting the unions and, you know, really taking care of people in this industry.
I mean, because to me, one of the things that I've often said is, you know, there's got to be reward to an honest day's work. And look, you know, I've done cleaning at retail places before. It's not easy. And you know, looking at the way things are going, these are the jobs that are left.
Exactly, Rick. I think that a lot of people need an honest working company that they can work for. And they're just not getting that in this industry.
So in looking at this strike vote, there's got to be a sense of empowerment that now you guys are sticking, everyone's kind of standing together, some kind of unity, some solidarity there. There's got to be a sense of empowerment, no?
Yeah, we're definitely, you know, kind of fed up with the lies and the kind of pressure that these companies put on us to do our job.
So what conditions are we talking about? Because, you know, one of the things that I say, it's rarely about money that, you know, people go on strike. It's generally about respect. But I guess you could make the argument that poverty wages is a sign of disrespect. But it's generally about, you know, respect, you know, being treated well on the job, conditions, those kind of things. What's the underlying cause here?
Well, for the most part, you know, most of these workers have, you know, some sort of disability, or they don't have the, you know, right kind of, I guess, education to get a better job. So this is what they're forced to deal with, and they can't make a living off it, you know.
Well, I mean, I got to be honest with you. Any job is a job you should be able to make a living at, regardless of your educational level or any of that. I mean, if you're doing a task for someone in this country, you should be at least able to be above the poverty line, no?
Right. I mean, we all got rent to pay. We got bills to pay. And it's just not enough of what we're getting right now.
So going forward, this strike vote just happened. Where do you go from here? I know you'll go back. You'll do some negotiating. Where do you see this going into the future?
We just really want to kind of have, like, this open communication with the companies that we're working for and really let them know that, you know, we want to get paid more. We want to unionize to make sure that our wages don't just get tarnished by, you know,
right,
contracts.
And you don't really want to go on strike. I mean, nobody wins really from a strike. This is just kind of, hey, we're serious. You got to sit down and talk.
Yeah, it's definitely putting us in a corner, you know, with the jobs that we work at. I mean, if we don't get enough money, I mean, who else are we going to look towards, you know, to get that sort of advancement in our jobs.
Yeah, I'm wishing that. I hope you guys are the best. I hope you. I hope this wakes somebody up. You guys get to the table and something gets worked out.
Yeah, definitely. If any of the listeners that are listening want to help out, we can sign the you can sign a petition on our Facebook page at CTUL, that's the Center of Workers United in Struggle.
And we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. You can click on Grant Fraser's name. You know, as this moves forward, Grant, I'd love to have you come back and tell us what's going on, keep us abreast of the situation, because I got to be honest, this is what I see has to happen across the country, in your neck of the woods, in our neck of the woods, and we need to make these service sector jobs, those middle class jobs of tomorrow.
Yep, exactly.
Grant, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
You know, Pat, you know, I look at this and, you know, having myself worked, you know, fast food restaurants as a young man, having worked in department stores, this is not easy work. But, you know, I keep going back to the Reagan years, and I keep going back to this idea that, you know, he threw out there that we're going to move away from that dirty making stuff, and we're going to do everything service sector. And we're now living the Reagan dream. There's not as much manufacturing. In fact, there are less employees, less jobs in manufacturing now than at any point since World War II. You got productivity's way through the roof, wages in the toilet. In fact, profits through the roof, wages lower than they've ever been as a percentage of GDP. Something seriously wrong here.
I think everybody who's, pretty much everybody, I can't think of anyone who's gotten themselves an education and maybe a better job, had a worse job. You know, I think the fact that you've had that kind of job, I know I worked at, my very first job was McDonald's. The McDonald's that I like to frequent when I have that 6:30 in the morning, you know, Egg McMuffin problem, the guy that waits on me has got to be 70 years old.
Yeah.
Like somebody said earlier tonight, it's not a high school kid's job anymore. And that guy's nice to me, and he looks like he's got rheumatoid arthritis or something. You're thinking, my God, fella, shouldn't you be home? And let me get my own egg, you know what I mean? And you think, you're right. We ought to be boycotting that. We ought to be, nobody should be shopping at these places.
And I go back to, you know, my grandmother was a cashier for years. In fact, head cashier for a number of years at a small little department store in Cleveland called Uncle Bill's. And at that time, until the Kmarts and the Walmarts really, really put their thumb on things and broke the unions. At the time, the vast majority of those small department stores were unionized. And I tell the story, in 1985, when my grandmother stopped working there, she was making almost $8 an hour.
Wow.
With full eye, dental, health care, 6 weeks vacation, paid sick time, overtime, you name it, they had it because they negotiated. They fought for it. But as the Walmarts came in with their low, low prices, like you said, taking a loss because, you know, they're screwing their workers in other places. And the story of Sam Walton, who people put up on this pedestal, it just blows my mind because he made his money off of stealing wages from workers. I mean, that's how he made. That's how he had the comparative advantage.
And stealing businesses from businesses. He could afford to lose money at 10 Walmarts because he was making so much money at 100 Walmarts. But Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine, did a study on who pays minimum wage. And it is not small businesses. When we allow the Walmarts and the fast food retailers to come in and crush small businesses, get rid of, there was a place in Portland, Maine called Go-Go Burger. It was one burger place. Go-Go Burger. Great burgers. There's a McDonald's on every corner around it. Eventually, it just crushed it out with, like, you know, the 50-cent deal. And when we allow those small businesses to be driven out, we drive out people who actually have a conscience on how they pay their neighbor.
Well, because they see them.
Right.
That's
they know
the difference.
Them, and they know that their kid is sick, you know? And so what Bowdoin College discovered was that minimum wage is not paid by over 90% of small businesses. Those guys struggle to pay their neighbor a living wage. And so when they talk about anything that happens with it, what we're talking about is huge multinational corporations who, again, have to worry about their stockholders. They do not have to worry about the worker. Or, for that matter, you. You know, as long as you don't have a lawsuit against them, they're going to be fine.
And the way this Supreme Court has been ruling, good luck getting a lawsuit because, you know, the number of cases that have gone where they've thrown class action suits out, just mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody's going to have to sue individually. So you're going to have to take on these behemoths individually, and they know it's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen, no.
But, you know, I go back to this, and, you know, to me, again, it's like Paul Krugman said, you need to have that great compression again. And I thought after the collapse we would see some of that, where people are living in the same neighborhoods. Maybe not going to happen.
Nobody failed. The ones that were supposed to fail, the ones that were so big that they were supposed to fail, were too big to fail, and everybody else suffered. Nothing, I mean, there wasn't a capitalist working on what was going on. All this big capitalism, anti-socialism, it was socialism for the wealthy. I don't know. If you read Karl Marx, he predicted. He never called for violence. He predicted violence when unbridled capitalism saw hunger, starvation, and illness in people's children.
Well, it goes back to, as I've always said, when people's stomachs are empty, their head will get right. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's going to take that. Quick break, right back. Stick around. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Class majority. Rick Smith.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Step right up, folks, and take your chances in the amazing new American workplace. Constantly high unemployment. Low wages always. No employee bargaining power. A corporate paradise. This paradise has enriched the already rich investor elite and rewarded top executives with multimillion-dollar pay packages. It also lets corporations treat the masses of people in today's workforce like Kleenexes. Just use them up and toss them. After all, they're cheap, plentiful, and disposable. Indeed, taskmasters in suits have now redefined the term hired to mean that you're tethered to a corporation full-time, but you actually work and get paid for only the few hours a week when the boss calls. This nefarious practice, known as on-call shifts, is all the rage among national retail chains. Such giants as Abercrombie & Fitch, Gap, and Urban Outfitters require employees to work without set schedules and to be available to have their string yanked at any time, day or night, even on weekends, with as little as 2 hours' notice. Likewise, if customer traffic in a store is slow, retail workers who got dressed up, battled the morning commute, and reported on time can simply be sent away after an hour or so, with no pay for their lost hours. A recent survey of some 400 retail employees in New York City found that only 17% have a set schedule. Those with no set hours also have no set income and no life. If you're at the beck and call of the boss, what do you do with your children? How do you make a doctor's appointment? What if you're taking a class or trying to work a second job? This is Jim Hightower saying, this shameful on-call practice says that the corporation owns you, and that abuse of workers is a legitimate business practice in America. To help stop it, contact RetailActionProject.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
I am 60 years old. I was born in 1951. I went through the civil rights there, and I'm telling you, I'm still here. And if I can stand, you can stand and keep standing.
Fight down, fight down, fight down.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. A new phone app out. Get your smartphone. It's boycott. Saying, hey, you know what? Do you want to know the Koch brother products? Do you want to know who Monsanto's products are? Do you want to know who's making this stuff? Well, you can evidently this app for your phone. You can scan the barcode and they will tell you.
That's
so that at
great.
The shelf you can go, you know what? I choose not to support these right wing ideologues and these corporate criminals. Going to go somewhere else.
So, I love it.
You know, for me, I love using that right wing ideology. Well, we're gonna with our dollars.
Yeah.
You know, you can boycott, just not for other workers.
Well, you know, I'm kind of upset with me because I have an AT&T phone.
And?
Well, they're, you know, constantly screwing somebody or other.
And so is Verizon.
I know.
The good thing about AT&T is, you know, at least the wireless part, they're unionized, and you know, their workers make a decent living.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go with, you know, the T-Mobile world, where they fire pregnant women. I mean, sorry, you got to go to the bathroom, honey. We're going to charge you your vacation.
Can we just talk a little bit about gender for 1 minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
Pat Robertson.
I love Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson on his show yesterday tells a woman whose husband cheated to remember that he's a man. That's the excuse?
And look, that's the excuse for what's going on with the military as well.
She needs to understand he's a man, and she needs to be more grateful that she lives in the United States of America. On the 700 Club, Robertson told a woman whose husband was cheating on her that she should stop focusing on his adultery and instead ponder, does he have a home for you to live in? Does he provide food for you to eat? Does he provide clothes for you to wear? Is he nice to the children? Is he handsome?
What's wrong with that?
All right, I'll give you the handsome one. Okay, be just a shallow.
Come on, I mean, he's just a crackpot. I mean, at this point, he's comic relief. You know,
I know. That's why I brought him up.
But the sad reality is there are a bunch of crazy people who watch this guy.
There are people who actually believe that one person, because of their anatomical makeup, should be the only decider in the house. And then that overflows into all the rest of the world.
And as I've said, I could easily live in that world. Because anatomically, I'm correct. Problem comes, and this is where
Could you live in a household where someone else just made all the decisions, though? Could you just say one person makes the decisions and it's not going to be me?
Oh, no.
All right.
Never in a million years.
No?
And like,
why? What's so important about the decisions?
I
have to make them.
That's exactly it.
I
could live in that world. But the reality is I've got two daughters, and I don't want them living in that world.
Yeah.
Because I'd have to kill somebody. And in jail, I don't think I do well in jail.
You definitely might have another decider every now and then that calls you snookums.
And that's the problem. But, you know, I love the religious crazy. I do. And I think, you know, you look at Robertson, who, you know, clearly off the deep end. But not nearly as off the deep end as my favorite congresswoman. I love me some Michelle Bachmann.
Oh.
I love crazy. And I know you've seen this this clip of her just kind of, yeah, channeling her inner Baptist minister.
She's a congressperson. Oops, I'm sorry.
Answers what we are doing here today. Humbling ourselves before an almighty God. Crying out to an almighty God. Saying, not of ourselves, but you. Would you save us, O God? We repent of our sins. We turn away from them. We seek you. We seek your ways.
I'm going to puke.
That's something that we're doing today, that we did on the National Day of Prayer.
It's something
that we have chosen to do as well on another landmark day
later this year,
on September 11th.
Oh, got to get that. Yeah. Got to throw the September 11th. And her point is, well, you know, we're being judged.
Because of Benghazi. Yeah. Benghazi's a punishment. 9/11's a punishment. This is what she launched into. She's a United States congressperson. Shut up. with the religious crap. You remember when, what's his name there, that Ashcroft whack job, who, by the way, used to sing Bible spirituals with Condi Rice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Ashcroft drapes a robe on a stone statue so her breasts don't show. Like, Ashcroft, I don't know what your wife's made out of, but really, they're not that firm. But he drapes a robe on it, and that is not obscene. A naked statue is not obscene. That, she was, did you hear the echo? She was in Congress doing that.
Yeah.
Maybe the plan is just to make everyone attractive to Rick Smith so that everybody is crazy.
There you go. I've said it a million times.
Everyone crazy.
I love Michelle. I love me some Bachman.
Well, she's beautiful.
She is beautiful, but she's crazy.
Just shut up,
and
Michelle.
I love crazy.
Well, then you wouldn't like her anymore, would you? If she shut up, you wouldn't like her because you wouldn't be crazy enough.
But, yeah, I like Pat Robertson, too.
What is it? Is it satanic? Is it some spiritual thing that people who are atheists, they hate God, they hate the expression of God?
You can't hate God if you're an atheist. You don't believe in him. I got to buy this guy a dictionary.
My other favorite, Pat Robertson.
Push that retirement age out to 70 or 72. And it's not going to hurt anybody because people really like to work.
It's not going to hurt anybody. They don't deserve a vacation. No. They don't deserve to be able to kick their feet up after 45 years of labor. No, they don't deserve to be able to go visit their grandchildren. It's not just
you
to be lazy.
You lie. You hate America.
Yeah, you know, he was getting squeezed too tight in that. His voice really changed.
You know, but I look at this and look, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're just sideshows.
But they're not. You said it a minute ago. People are buying this stuff. They're saddling up to the table and devouring this crap. And it's bad. It's bad for everybody. It's bad for their children. Like the man who doesn't say, I have two daughters and I can't live in that world. You know, it's bad for everybody. It's bad. Poor Sarah Palin's daughter.
Yeah.
What was her name? The one who was pregnant at the...
Bristol,
thank you. I mean, she gets the abstinence-only lecture. Her mother's an intolerant human being, so probably not running up to her to tell her she's disobeying. You know, nobody to talk to because she's under a spotlight. And then her mother says, tough luck, I don't care, I'm going to run for office anyway and throw you to the wolves. Who loves these kids?
But she got to be on Dancing with the Stars.
No, that's that consolation prize. It's like that guy who's now the honorary captain of the Giants that doesn't have any legs. And everybody's like, well, yeah, he lost his legs in the war, but look, he's happier now. No, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think all those wonderful, brave people who still stand up and show you their prosthetic devices and have the courage to do that, they're not better off because we sent them to a war we shouldn't have been fighting in the first place. That's for your conscience. That's your salve. Blech. I find that very sad.
I'm with you.
So how do we turn around?
Well, I think education, mm-hmm. activation, engagement, and taking to the streets. I'm a big fan of streets.
Let's go on a big trip. What do you think? Let's take to the streets.
I'm there. In fact, June 8th, we're going to be heading across country.
Isn't that great?
I'm looking forward to the People's Tour for America, and the key being the people, you know, my kids especially. Yeah. And the whole genesis of this came from that History Channel thing, the men who built America, that my kids were told to watch, as if that's some type of historical education for them to be indoctrinated with.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to go to the places and see what was built. I want them to see the struggles and the heartache and what built this country and really, you know, some of the mistakes that we've made.
You know, the whole Carnegie thing where when they interviewed him about his, you know, 180 libraries, and he said, well, I had to underpay, basically, I'm paraphrasing for him, I had to pay low wages because if I'd left it up to the workers, they wouldn't have built libraries.
Right.
Says who? Says who, you son of a gun? You don't have a right to say. You don't know what people would do if they came together as a community.
They were just wasted on food and clothing.
So they got by, didn't they? They got by. They still worked their 47 extra years. They were a little thin. or they were heavy from eating really bad food. But they got by, and I built a library. Well, you know what? I think the communities build great stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, in his defense, you know, this is why we have a 92% tax rate, to get people like him to build libraries.
Yeah, that's right.
Because if you're not going to do it voluntarily, we'll take the money, we'll do it for ourselves.
Except now we won't, because those people are the only people with any power right now, because the average person hasn't taken their power back. They haven't taken to the street, like you said. They haven't done that. And hopefully they'll feel more powerful about doing it. You know, I'm sitting here with Rick Smith. I'll tell you, he's a handsome man, fairly burly, big-shouldered. But he's not superhuman. You can do it, too. You know, if Rick can do it, you can do it. And, you know, look in the mirror and say, I'm that guy that's saving my country.
Or at least my little part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I say, how we change the world. We change our little part of the world, and maybe the guy next door goes, hey, you know, looks pretty good. Let's do the same thing. That's how you change the world. One community at a time. One street, one neighborhood, one city, one state.
And when you're about to fall asleep and you say, now, what's that last thing I can do to save my community? You can write to your congressperson or write to your governor or write to your legislator and remind them that you're going to vote this year for somebody who has remembered you.
Exactly. And you look at all these schemes that have come up, and you know, where are the jobs? They told us 2010's job. I haven't seen it. And while the governor may call himself the more jobs governor, that doesn't pan out as
it's
well.
It's a snow job.
Exactly. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Prepare a moment for the homeless or the poor. Who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Well, you can hear it already. The righties are screaming, oh, we want impeachment! Impeachment! You knew it was coming. And, you know, look, it's what they've been screaming since the day after the election in 2008. You knew it was coming. It's the MO. But, you know, now it looks like the administration's kind of giving them a little bit of fodder. And we're here to talk about what's going on in D.C., our good friend Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service. Justin, what do you think? Impeachment? I got to be honest. I'm kind of pro-Biden.
You know, I am pro-Biden as well, but nevertheless, I don't think our country really needs another impeachment hearing, especially since it didn't really seem to help in the 90s. Actually, maybe it did help. You know, the economy was a lot better. We
had better times, but whatever. Anyways, we have seen some Republicans saying that in 2014 the idea of impeachment is going to be on the table, and that's based solely on the idea that maybe they will be able to win the majority in the Senate. And considering how brutal they have been so far to the administration, it's not necessarily out of the realm of possibility to imagine them going down that road, even though it looks like no laws have been broken.
Yeah, I look at the report on O'Reilly and Bernie Goldberg, the sports journalist, agreed that Obama could probably cure cancer and the Republicans would still hate him.
No, that's certainly true. And just, you know, if you really want a good example of the hypocrisy, you know, you can look at the YouTube videos of Republicans in the Senate calling for a more aggressive investigation. Now they have had the evidence that the investigation was a lot more aggressive than people initially believed by subpoenaing AP records, and now they are taking the administration to task for that. So there really looks like there's no way that the administration can win.
And I understand the administration released, what, another 100 pages of emails?
Yes, they did. They released that late in the day. They actually released them on paper. I was not in the White House at the time, so I was not able to flip through it. But I'm sure that's something we're going to be picking up later this week and just going through. But from what we can tell, it doesn't look like there was any evidence of a political cover-up by any stretch of the imagination. And, in fact, it looks like the CIA were the ones who really redacted a lot of the talking points.
Yeah, but we both know that the CIA runs Obama, right?
Oh, obviously.
Let's talk about the IRS thing. You know what I find interesting about this whole IRS situation is, you know, I remember several years back complaining that the Bush administration was doing the exact same thing to progressive groups, to the NAACP, to a number, to Greenpeace, to a number of groups, and nobody really cared.
And
And now you got, oh, a couple people who are running around saying, we're not going to pay our taxes, even if we get this status. We take a look at them, and, well, now all hell to pay.
No, it's certainly strange, and, you know, I guess the main difference is we never saw an administration figure within the IRS come out and flatly acknowledge that these kind of practices were happening during the Bush administration. So I guess a silver lining is the Obama administration is more transparent than their predecessor. But we have certainly seen some late-breaking news come out on this scandal at around 6 o'clock today. Took to the East Wing and announced that he had asked for the resignation of the acting IRS director, Stephen Miller, and received it. Of course, that's, you know, a little Washington word for being fired.
Right.
But heads have rolled, and it may just be sort of a cosmetic change at this point, but it is sort of a necessary action that the administration had to take in this regard.
And I got to be honest with you. To me, the answer in all of this is to do away with that entire tax dodge. Make people pay their taxes. And, you know, you look at these Tea Party groups that have propped up. You know, you kidding me? Their education? No. I know people who are in these groups. It has nothing to do with education.
No, that's very true. And that's actually an argument for a different day, I guess, whether or not 501(c)(4)s, you know, are even real to a certain extent, or if they should have any political activity whatsoever. But nevertheless, those are the rules that both parties have sort of been playing by. And it looks very bad when you have an IRS looking like it's playing favorites.
And for me, Justin, being a labor guy, I think everybody should have to have the same kind of reporting that labor unions have to report. They have to report everything. In fact, there's an entire department in our government that looks after doing nothing but tracking where labor unions spend their money.
No, and that's not surprising. And it would absolutely make sense to see some wider scrutiny, especially when it comes to these groups that are really pretty powerful at the end of the day and have accounted for a large amount of the 2012 spending, to have a greater level of scrutiny. And, I guess I would agree. Yeah, let's certainly try to have more resources dedicated to that. That would make sense.
You know, I got to be honest. You know, when I heard this report that, oh, they're going after Tea, I had to wonder about the person who let that out, because it was at a Bar Association event, right?
Yes, it was.
And, you know, there was part of me that goes, you know, what was the motive of saying that?
No, that's a very good question. Apparently, there was a report that was set to be released in the coming days that would have, certainly given the administration some more time to respond to this. But instead, we saw an official just kind of go out and, sort of just blather it out, and therefore put the administration in a tight spot. it looks like it may have been a pretty big bungle on her part. Nobody was necessarily expecting like much news, you know, pretty much run-of-the-mill bar association event. So I'm not sure what the motivation was behind it, but it looks like it could have just been, you know, plain and simple incompetence.
Or, you know, or was it, you know, hey, here's an opportunity to get out ahead of this. And, you know, where's the investigation into that leak?
That's a very good question.
Maybe we could tap her phones.
Oh, there we go. I mean, I'm sure more Americans would be in favor of tapping the IRS than our lovely AP correspondent.
I'm with you. But, you know, I look at the AP thing and, you know, this phone thing. And, you know, I think one of the things that hasn't really been talked about, again, you go back to the whole, to the Bush years. This is what the Bush years brought us, these secret subpoenas. Thank you, Patriot Act, for all of this stuff. And to me, it's about time that people start talking about, you know, going back and revisiting some of the Patriot Act.
No, that makes sense. And I guess there is some legislative band-aids that have been proposed today. We saw that the White House has asked Senator Charles Schumer to move forward with a media shield law. But essentially, at the end of the day, that law would not have prevented what happened 2 months ago from occurring. It says that the administration cannot go after those who perform leaks unless if it is a national security concern. And the administration has been pretty adamant that the AP story was, in fact, a major national security issue. With you know, Attorney General Eric Holder coming out yesterday and saying this was one of the biggest leaks he has seen, one of the biggest leaks in terms of national security threats that he has seen since 1976. And he tried to stress that was not hyperbole. And that was something that he strongly believed in.
Yeah. I have to wonder what would have happened if this was the Bush years.
That's a very good question.
I don't think it would have seen the light of day.
Well, no. I mean, we saw the Bush administration, involved with the Valerie Plame issue. We saw them going after James Wiseman from the New York Times. They weren't necessarily good when it came to a lot of these, national security protection issues. They were very hypocritical in a lot of senses. So I don't think this would have been something that would have come out under the Bush administration at all.
Yeah. And finally, military having a black eye. What's with all of these sexual harassment, these sexual assault cases popping up?
That's a very good question, and this story would have been a much bigger story had it happened any other week. It looks like just on the heels of a Air Force officer who oversaw combating sexual abuse, there was another investigation going on this time with an Army officer who was in charge of a response unit for sexual assault for responding and preventing it. And he is now under investigation as well for mistreating subordinates, assault, and a whole myriad of other issues, including pandering. And it really has caused a lot of panic within the Pentagon. Today we saw Chuck Hagel coming out and calling for a situation where all military officers and personnel who are involved in preventing sexual abuse are now going to be forced to go through a retraining program. This is sort of a necessary step considering everything that happened, but it still looks like there is a larger systemic problem, and it certainly gives a lot of fodder to those who are calling for the prosecution process and the sentencing process to be taken out of the military and put in a more public setting that gives lawmakers and other people more oversight.
Yeah, I don't know what that training program would look like. Don't rape anyone. That seems like a pretty easy message. I think that's one of those things you learn when you're a little kid.
Well, at the very least, it should have been involved in this training the first time around. But I guess it's a little too late for that.
I saw a report put out by the Pentagon. Three assaults an hour in 2012.
Three sexual assaults
an hour, every hour, every day, for the entire year of 2012.
No, it looks like a 30% increase from 2010 to 2012. The rosy picture that the Pentagon has been trying to put on that is, you know, maybe there's not more assaults happening, but maybe they're just being reported more since the culture is shifting. But nevertheless, that is something that is absolutely jarring and unacceptable.
I saw USA Today had a piece where they went through the number of people who were actually charged with sexual assault in 2012, and by the time they got down through all of the throwing them out, the defend the people not coming forward and testifying, and all of this stuff, it came down to 14% of the people who were originally charged were actually convicted of any crime.
Exactly, and that is another reason why we are seeing so many calls coming from lawmakers like Gillibrand and whatnot and McCaskill. for a new process to charge these things, since it doesn't look like enough is being done, and quite a bit is falling through the cracks.
Yeah. I don't know, Justin. I don't know. Anyway, I appreciate the time, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Never you will look back again. You fight on to the end. Together we will live on forevermore. Now we have defended from all things that are cruel. Now we are defenseless.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
Just like you or me, Earth casts a shadow. Earth's shadow extends into space in the direction opposite the sun.
There are several good times to think about and be aware of Earth's shadow. For example, you can see Earth's shadow any evening ascending in the east. It ascends at the same rate that the sun is setting below the western horizon. The shadow is a deep blue-gray, and it's darker than the blue of the twilight sky. The pink band above the shadow is called the Belt of Venus. And just so you'll recognize it, remember that the shadow is curved in just the same way that the whole Earth is curved.
You can also see Earth's shadow during an eclipse of the moon. Earth's shadow extends so far into space that it can touch the moon. That's what a lunar eclipse is. It's the moon within Earth's shadow. During a lunar eclipse, a small amount of light from the sun filters through our planet's atmosphere onto Earth's shadow on the moon. That's why, at the middle part of a total lunar eclipse, the shadow on the moon looks reddish.
There's a third time to think about seeing Earth's shadow, and that is, night is a shadow. When night falls, you're standing within the shadow of Earth. So check out Earth's shadow, in the east just after sunset, brushing the moon's face during a lunar eclipse. Or think about it when you're standing outside in darkness after sunset. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show.
The walls came down.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So a Florida bowler thought he was going to go out for a night of boozing and bowling. Turns out he shot himself. Okay, picked up a big heavy ball, threw it down the line.
Did he put the ball in a cannon?
No, he had the gun in his pocket while he was bowling, shot himself.
The old safety's off while I shoot my ball down the alley.
There you go. And, you know, what I liked about the article, it says it was an accident.
Yeah.
You think?
That's why you don't put the gun in your pocket when you go bowling.
And when I was reading the story, because I read through the whole thing, because I wanted to see if maybe he shot himself in the you know, because I think stupid should not reproduce.
In the ball?
There you go.
Sack?
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
You that's know, what you carry a ball in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These are the people you don't want reproducing.
Yeah, but see, they don't shoot them their own balls off until they've actually had a few kids.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
This is true.
You don't have to save up to afford a weapon. That's why I think if we're really going to be pro-Second Amendment, we give all the poor people guns. You see a homeless man, give him a gun.
I'm guessing this guy was not a Rockefeller.
Yeah, that's why he had to save up.
He was certainly not an Einstein.
But he made everyone else look like one.
Good news today out of Maryland. If you're one of the folks who think that we should have some sane, rational regulation on how we look at background checks, Maryland today signed into law the Firearm Safety Act of 2013. They're going to launch some background checks based on a fingerprint background check. I want to make sure that anyone buys a handgun, not a criminal. They claim, according to the release, that this type of legislation has already been passed in 5 states and saves lives in those states. They say in Maryland, 68% of the gun owners who they polled, they support a common sense solution to prevent gun violence. We'll see.
Isn't that interesting? You can use a fingerprint to find out if someone's a criminal before they buy a gun. But the state of Texas won't allow a DNA test to find out if someone's innocent.
There you go. Well, you know, hey, priorities. Profit. There's a lot of profit in prison. A lot of profit in people buying guns. So we're going to try and make profit easier. So we need to keep those people locked up. We put a lot of money into building those beds. But what I found interesting, and this is one of those moments where I go back and I think about, you know, the whole fingerprint thing. Because mm-hmm. immediately I hearken back to my Christmas, because we took the kids to Disney for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We spent, you know, 2 weeks over Christmas break in Florida to do the Disney thing. And, you know, the fingerprint thing kind of stuck in my mind because to get into Disney with your card, you give them your fingerprint.
Right.
To activate
Wait a minute. You're going to go to Disney and you're going to go in and you're going to pay like an $80 ticket. And then in order to use your $80 ticket to ride on the Tilt-A-Whirl or the Flying Teacup or something, you have to give them your fingerprint?
Yeah, well, if you pre-buy your tickets, if you have a number of them, they give you a little card that's your pass, in order to make sure that if you lose your pass, you can get it back with your fingerprint. This is how they sell it to you. And I remember I had this conversation with this T-Twit from South Carolina, which evidently there are a lot of them there.
Sanford.
So we're taking this shuttle, which was, you know, the public transportation at Disney was phenomenal. Never waited more than 5 minutes for a bus to take me to any park I wanted to go and back and forth. It was fantastic. So I'm sitting on the bus with this guy and I'm going, you know, it would be great if we had this kind of public transportation, in our cities and where we live, so we could get back and forth to work. And so we had this whole right, whether you're talking socialism and good, but you're happy here.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go and we have this heated debate. We only got a couple of minutes. So we have this heated argument on the bus, and my wife's elbowing me, telling me to shut up because the whole bus is watching us.
She married you. She got what she got.
So we go into the gate where, you know, you go up there and you give them your card and you have to put your fingerprint. I chose not to, and, of course, the recourse for not giving your fingerprint is if you lose your card, you're SOL. So I get to the other side of the gate.
And Geppetto keeps your soul.
Right. So I get to the other end of the gate, and before we parted ways, I go, let me ask you something. I said, what would you think if Obama said, you know what, in order to file your taxes, you had to put your fingerprint on your IRS form? What would you think about that? And he goes, ah! So he went off in this rage. And
So
he went off in this rage, and I go, I don't really care about that. You just gave Disney your fingerprint, and you didn't think twice about it.
Yeah.
And he just gave me this look like, you know, this grand epiphany. I said, so you have no problem giving a private for-profit corporation your most detailed information, your credit card, all of this stuff, your fingerprint. But if our government of for and by we the people wanted that to buy a firearm, that's...
You know what would be so cool? We've got to write this. Don't tell anybody. Would be so cool if all of a sudden there was like a spy novel where a employee from some godforsaken country we hate gets a job at Disney, you know, making falafel, and they get a hold of this fingerprint stash, and they start, like, making fingerprints
like they can, you know, they make a relief of it, and leaving them on weapons that do things and just like framing middle stupid America for all kinds of crimes they actually didn't commit. All they actually did was trust corporate America. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be. They just trusted that Disney would.
Yeah, and then, like, Bruce Willis can come running out of It's a Small World and just start spraying, you know, the bad guys or whatever.
So would the women of the 1%, would they push the handicapped kids in front to stop the bullets? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, no, I should have been further back in line.
No, I mean, but, you know, I look at this whole Disney thing and, you know, the level of intrusion of your privacy. And understand, look, the reality is you have no expectation of privacy with a private for-profit corporation. Your expectation of privacy and your rights are with you and your government.
They just sold your fingerprint. They sold it to everybody. Now everybody knows that this exact person on this exact day at this exact time spends a ridiculous amount of money on stuff that has absolutely no purpose.
And made in China. But here's the better part of all of this. When I was there, they were talking about rolling out this wonderful new plan. You could have a wristband, and the wristband would be your room key, your park tickets, your credit card information. So you could just walk through, pick up whatever you want, wave your wristband. We don't have to worry about workers. We don't have to worry about any of that stuff because the magic wristband does it all. You plan your rides out. This wristband is everything. It's wonderful. It's fabulous. And, you know, I started thinking about, you know, at some
point. Does it tighten on you if you misbehave?
Now, that I might be in favor of. If the kids got out of hand, it automatically snapped them in the line.
Like Captain Kirk when he's pulling on the neck thing.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is that there was a guy in Pittsburgh who tried to put a dog collar on his kid so that when the kid left the yard and shocked him. He went to jail.
Huh. Yeah.
But I guess if you voluntarily did it, I guess that wouldn't be a crime as long as you were over 18. So if you voluntarily put the dog collar on so you wouldn't leave Disney, maybe that's a...
That would be fabulous. Can't you just picture all these people wandering around like, oh, I got too close to the, you know, I almost exited. What was I thinking?
But what's great about this is you will have no idea until you get the bill when you get home how much you're spending. And the great thing about it is they will be able to track you wherever you want, wherever you go. And I love that in Congress, they're comparing, and I love this, John Cornyn, the senator from Texas. He seems to think this is what we should be doing with our border security. If you want to come here from another country, we should just put Disney in charge of our border security because they've got your fingerprint.
Get your fingerprint on the way, and then we'll know that the people who helped the Boston guys are still here.
Right.
That they expired, or Muhammad Atta didn't get his visa. All those things we didn't know because nobody was paying attention. I've got 60 seconds about Disney. Did you see that a change.org petition actually got them to stop turning that cute little chick redhead princess that they invented
into an anorexic?
Yeah, an anorexic with enormous breasts and voluptuous makeup and all kinds of stuff.
Like Angelina Jolie.
You know, poor Angelina Jolie. Yeah. Have her breasts removed and her ovaries removed so that she wouldn't die of cancer. But you had the best point of all off air, which was, what about a woman who can't afford that?
Huh?
What about a woman who comes back with the gene that says, yeah, you got a 90% chance of dying of cancer?
You die.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to pay or die health care. This is what the Republicans, what is it, the 38th repeal? $55 million they've wasted on trying to repeal this?
Let's face it, we love your breasts if they're squeezed into a bikini top, and we just don't care for them.
Filled with silicone.
We just don't care about them, though, if they're just, you know, healthy and staying that way.
If you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. Stitcher on your smartphone. Questions, comments, whatever's on your mind. Something I said got under your skin. You got to tell me one way or the other. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, Pat at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm sure she'll answer as well. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick at thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming. Time to flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is
coming